interpretation later on in life. So there have constantly been re-evaluations of this book as certain things have become a little bit racy.
Stephen, time has beaten us, but it is a fantastic film. I'd urge anybody to go and see it, particularly if you want to take kids to the cinemas. That's Stephen Armstrong from The Observer. Thank you all very much, and thanks for your company on Breakfast over the last 4 days. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Coming up at one, it's Sheila Fogarty, but right now, someone who's never heard of The Magic Faraway Tree. Shame on you.
Guilty as charged, Ian, I'm afraid.
Dear.
Clearly beyond before my time. Thank you very much, Ian. Have a lovely Easter Monday. Hello and a very, very good morning indeed to you this sunny Monday Easter. More concerns have been raised this morning about Donald Trump's mental stability after an expletive-filled rant on social media about, yep, you guessed it, the war in Iran. Trump's use of the F-bomb, far from the typical language of an incumbent US president, fueling further concerns that the most powerful man in the world might have completely lost the plot. But with new reports this morning that a ceasefire deal between the US and Iran is now on the table, less than a day after that threat-filled post about the hell that Trump was vowing to unleash, could it all have been part of some sort of genius plan? And might there actually, after all, be some method in Trump's madness?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a senior Iranian official has confirmed that Tehran has received a ceasefire plan which could end its war with the US. Iran says it won't be pressured into deadlines and won't reopen the Strait of Hormuz as part of any temporary ceasefire. President Trump has threatened to blow up Iranian power plants and bridges if the strait isn't reopened by tomorrow. Defence analyst Professor Michael Clark is doubtful that the ceasefire proposal put forward by Pakistan will amount to anything.
My guess would be that this proposal won't consist of all that much from the American point of view. I mean, President Trump is looking for a way out, and I think he'll settle for forms of words which won't stand too much scrutiny, but will be enough to get him out, to declare victory and leave. That's clearly what he wants to do.
NHS England is urging patients not to put off seeking care ahead of a six-day walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. Officials say people should attend planned appointments unless they've been contacted to reschedule. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has called the strike action disappointing. A fifth person has been arrested on suspicion of murder over the death of a pedestrian killed in a crash in Barnsley. 45-year-old Liam Green died after being hit by a car in Cudworth on Friday. A 53-year-old man was arrested on Sunday and remains in police custody for questioning. A host of benefits and the state pension are rising from today as the new financial year begins. It means millions of people receiving universal credit or a state pension will see their payments increase. The two-child benefit cap has also been scrapped from today. LBC's Thomas Watts has more.
The cap was first introduced by the Conservatives in 2017, limiting child tax credit and universal credit to the first two children in most households. In November, the Chancellor announced it would be abolished while outlining her budget, following months of pressure from Labour backbenchers. But the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, said the decision favoured benefit claimants over working people.
A second sponsor has pulled out of London's Wireless Festival. Diageo's followed Pepsi after Kanye West was announced as the headliner this summer. Anger's growing over the booking following the rapper's previous anti-Semitic remarks and use of Nazi imagery. West apologised earlier this year and blamed a bipolar episode. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Need anything from Tesco? Like a delicious whole leg of lamb? Or a succulent large beef roasting joint? Now, even better than half price this Easter with your Tesco Club card. Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores and online ends 10th of April. Club card or app required. Exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Just Just gone 10 o'clock. Hello there. A very, very good morning to you this Easter Bank Holiday Monday. Lovely to have you with us this morning. Ben Kentish here in for James O'Brien here on LBC. And my goodness, there's lots for us to get our teeth into this morning. We've got the very latest in a few minutes' time on the breaking news this morning that a ceasefire deal between the US and Iran is now on the table. And if it's agreed, big if, admittedly, the war could end for at least a month and a half. And crucially for all of us, the oil would start flowing through the Strait of Hormuz once again. More on that to come. We'll also get the quite incredible details that are emerging of the rescue of the US airman trapped behind enemy lines in Iran after his jet was struck down. Been described as one of the most audacious special forces operations in US military history. Tell you lots more about it in about half an hour's time. Then we'll talk about the Green Party later on. What's driving their surge? Is it a flash in the pan or are they here to stay? And as Keir Starmer says, Nazi-supporting rapper Kanye West shouldn't be able to perform in London. Are you with the Prime Minister on that? All that to come between now and 1 o'clock. But we start today with the man behind so much of what we're set to talk about this morning. The president who has started a war that he's now scrambling around desperately trying to find a way out of. There is, isn't there, a very, very long list of adjectives that has been used to describe Donald Trump in the time that he's been in politics. Narcissist, venal, corrupt, petty, pathetic, infantile, dishonest. And those are probably some of the more polite ones that his critics use. But the one that is on the front pages of no less than three British newspapers this morning, I would say, is more concerning than all the other descriptions that have been put to Donald Trump. Because the word that is used to describe Trump's latest threats in relation to the war in Iran is unhinged. Unhinged, the front one-word headline on the front page of this morning's Daily Mirror. Unhinged, the word that The Guardian, admittedly in quote marks, uses to describe Donald Trump's ultimatum to the Iranian regime. And even the Daily Mail, far from a usual critic of the Trump regime, also using the same phrase. They talk about an unhinged president issuing a foul-mouthed ultimatum. And you can't help but conclude that that is not a far-fetched, outlandish claim anymore. That as the pressure has grown on Donald Trump, domestically as well as internationally in the last few weeks, he has given the impression that the heat is getting to him in quite a serious way. We've had the repeated threats to Iran. We've had the often completely incoherent, almost always contradictory statements. We've had the furious lashing out at US allies and threats to countries like ours. And then yesterday we had Donald Trump raising the stakes even further still in one of the most eye-opening and I would say troubling posts on his Truth Social account for really quite some time. And that is quite a contested field, I will grant you. But yesterday morning, as the war rumbled on and the prospects of peace seemed slimmer than ever, Trump, presumably tucked somewhere in the White House, picked up his phone and bashed out the following message. This is what he said. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in Iran. There will be nothing like it, 3 exclamation marks. Open the effing strait, you crazy bastards. Or you'll be living in hell. Just watch, capital letters, false exclamation mark, praise be to Allah, DJT. And in what have you got there? 3 sentences, quite a few indications that Donald Trump has absolutely lost the plot. It wasn't just the use of the F-bomb. It's not just the slightly crazed use of capitals and punctuation marks, because that perhaps we're used to. It wasn't just the description of a foreign country as crazy, a word that I won't repeat, but generally means children born out of wedlock. It wasn't even the very odd and presumably mocking reference to praising Allah. All of that was bad, wasn't it? But not as bad as the threat to carry out a whole series of war crimes by blowing up a country's civilian energy infrastructure and leaving millions of people, schools, hospitals, whole towns and cities without power. Hence why the word unhinged is now being used more and more to describe Donald Trump. And it's not just his critics this time. MAGA favourite, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who for so long was a fangirl of Donald Trump, one of his most loyal outriders. The woman best known for promoting mad conspiracies about Jewish space lasers and telling journalists to, well, I won't repeat the phrase, declared Trump had gone insane, in her view, and called for an intervention. Chuck Schumer, admittedly a Democrat, leader of the Senate, wrote, "Happy Easter, America. As you head off to church and celebrate with friends and family, the president is ranting like an unhinged madman on social media." Unhinged, insane. The language now being used to describe Donald Trump by people across the political spectrum. Is that what's going on here? Has Donald Trump, in your view and your considered opinion, completely lost the plot? Has the pressure got to him? Is he now insane, as Marjorie Taylor Greene alleges? Is he unhinged, as Chuck Schumer puts it, in that phrase repeated on three British newspapers this morning? Or do you think there is, and I can't quite believe I'm saying this, but do you think there might be some method in the madness? And the only reason that I posed that question this morning is because in the last hour or so, we have had breaking news, and we'll get more on it in a minute, that a ceasefire deal is now on the table between the US and Iran that would see the war ended at least temporarily and the oil start flowing through the Strait of Hormuz again. And there are those around Trump, there are those who support Trump, who say it's the sheer unpredictability. It's the impression that he is a bit mad and is willing to do what nobody else would that gets results. And I just wonder, I just pose the question, is that what happened this morning? Is it no coincidence that after that apparently completely balmy rant on social media, now there's progress, it seems, towards some sort of ceasefire? Or do you think we're just too keen to see method in what is pure and simple madness? That there is no method, there's no strategy, there's no master plan. The timing of that deal or potential deal is just a coincidence, and Trump is simply unhinged now. Which is a pretty sobering and troubling conclusion to come to. But let me know your take on it. 0345 6060 973. Is Trump actually unhinged, or is there some method that you spot in what seems like pure madness? Call me or WhatsApp me on that number. You can text 84850 or say, "Alexa, send a comment to LBC." Just before I come to your thoughts this morning, let's talk to Nomi Baryakov, award-winning international peace negotiator, expert in diplomacy in the Middle East, and a fellow at the Geneva Centre for Security Policy. Nomi, very, very good morning to you. Does Donald Trump resemble an unhinged president from your perspective?
First of all, good morning to you, Ben, and to the listeners on this Easter Monday. I think unhinged is an understatement. If you look at the insults of his recent post the last 2 days, I mean, the reference 2 days ago, praise be to God. Yesterday, praise be to Allah, certainly in a mocking fashion, and I will not repeat the words that you had alluded to earlier, children out of wedlock and the famous F word, in a social post referring to what he's going to do, including the fact that he's actually announcing. I think this is the first time that a president of any state, or certainly of a state that claims to be a leading democracy, actually gives notice of his intention to commit war crimes, because the initial words of that particular post from yesterday is a very, which you read very clearly, is a warning to, he calls it a power plant day, bridge day, all wrapped in one. I mean, those are civilian targets, or some civilian targets have already been hit, medical facilities, bridges, and universities, including Shahid Beheshti, famous university in Tehran. So we are really on a borderline of what is being, what is happening there from a legal point of view. I don't think that the US president cares about the rules-based order. I don't think he cares about international law. And he certainly is using language which is not conducive to diplomacy. The Iranians, of course, will have the opposite reaction. Neither the US nor the Iranian side has responded to the ceasefire proposal. We do know that there were some, I'd just like to give a bit of context. We do know that the head of the army in Pakistan has been, Pakistan's army chief, Asim Munir, has been speaking overnight to the US vice president, J.D. Vance, who's very keen to end the war. I think he never wanted to go to war. and to Abbas Araghchi, that's the foreign minister of Iran, that has been given U.S. guarantees that he will not be assassinated because they want to negotiate with him. And, of course, the other person that they're talking to is Steve Witkoff, who is the envoy in charge of the communication. So a lot going on behind the scenes. Unhinged, definitely, but it's worse than unhinged. It's insulting. It's counterproductive. It's an announcement of potential war crimes. This is not a good strategy for diplomacy.
Is it, just on the counterproductive point, I mean, is it really counterproductive? Because, you know, allies of Donald Trump will say, look, this is what he does. He makes these huge threats because he is so maverick and unpredictable. Nobody can really be sure whether or not he'll see them through. And often he doesn't, admittedly. Trump always chickens out. But what that does is focus minds and gets him what he wants, because nobody wants to take the risk or see and wait and see whether he will actually follow through on that threat. So in this case, is there not a possibility that Iran thought, my goodness, he might be serious about taking out all of our energy infrastructure. Maybe we do need to step up these negotiations.
Well, I think there's two sides to the coin. You're told he's chickened out. He's already extended the deadline now a third time. Originally, it was a 5-day deadline. Then it was a 10-day deadline, which was supposed to expire today. And then yesterday, he extended it again by another 20 or more than 24 hours, because it's 8. The deadline now is tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern time, which is 1 a.m. London time Wednesday. Mm. So he's already so that extension shows that he's really, really, really keen to get to a ceasefire. He's keen for an exit strategy, and he's really putting weight behind the negotiations. What I'm saying, yes, it's part of his tactic to make these threats, but it has the opposite. These threats actually have the opposite effect on Iran. Don't forget that also in the last 24 hours, the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps Chief of Intelligence, has been assassinated. So we are seeing that there is no the assassinations are continuing, except for those that have been given guarantees that they will not be assassinated. That's the foreign minister of Iran, as I said, and also the Speaker of the Parliament, Gharibabov. So there are negotiations behind the scenes. We do know that this is part of the president's tactic, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Whether it will work it remains to be seen.
Naomi, great to have you with us this morning. Thank you for coming on the programme. Naomi Baryakov, award-winning international peace negotiator, expert in diplomacy in the Middle East, and a fellow at the Geneva Centre for Security Policy. Your call's already coming in. I posed the question there to Naomi, because that's what Donald Trump supporters say. I don't see any method in this madness. I just see madness. I see a man who is increasingly bitter, resentful, isolated, under pressure, can't deal with it, can't see a way out, and is lashing out. And when you are the most powerful man in the world, with the most powerful military in the history of humanity and a nuclear arsenal at your disposal, those things, I think, are pretty troubling conclusions to draw about the mental stability of the man in the White House. But you tell me, do you think Trump is unhinged, as several newspaper front pages this morning are alleging that he is? Or are you one of the people who thinks, no, he's underestimated it? People can't see the genius. Might look like madness, but actually it's all a ingenious ruse. I'm not convinced, but maybe you are. 345-60-60-973 for your thoughts on that. To your calls right after this. 10:17.
LBC.
Sandy!
Yes! Spring migration?
Got my wings on 2-for-1 tickets to Westminster Abbey with SWR rewards. You?
Hopping on a speedboat tour down the Thames.
Whoa, Sandy! You're unflappable!
Make every trip a treat with SWR rewards and get hundreds of deals on shows, meals and more. With fares frozen until 2027, there's no better time to travel. Southwestern Railway. Spread your wings. T's and C's apply.
Right, home from work, walk the dog, kids are back.
Mom!
Up the stairs for something. Ugh, back down, no idea what I went up for.
Mom, what's for dinner?
Chop, sizzle, done. HelloFresh can't slow life down, but it makes bringing everyone together around the table a whole lot easier. So it's phones down, forks up. HelloFresh, bring back dinner time.
Chase is the digital bank that gives your savings a boost anytime, anywhere.
Even on a long weekend break?
You bet. You could earn 4.5% AER variable, including a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months. Right now with Chase, you could be boosting your way to...
A deposit for the kids?
Exactly. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross. Interest paid monthly, eligibility and terms apply.
McGriddles, a new McDonald's breakfast. So it's maple syrup infused. It's sweet, then it's savoury. Because the sausage, you know, and the cheese and the egg. Oh, it's got the golden arches stamped on it too. Make that make sense. It's hard to put into words, but... Until 11am, subject to availability. Fees apply to delivery orders while stocks last.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements. You can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 past 10 the time. Just imagine if Joe Biden had gone on social media when he was president and posted what Donald Trump posted yesterday. Slightly crazed use of punctuation, capital letters, expletives, threats to commit war crimes, signing off with praise be to Allah from somebody who claims to be a practicing Christian. I mean, how else would that have been explained had that been Joe Biden or any other president other than a sign of some sort of madness? And yet when it's Donald Trump, there is this, I think, almost hope that it's anything else. I think we want to see something else in Trump's activities because the other conclusion is just too troubling to almost countenance, which is that the most powerful man in the world is increasingly losing the plot. He's already started a war and has no way to end it. He's threatened to invade allies. He's lashed out and mocked US allies like France and Britain recently. If we are genuinely saying, and seriously, I don't mean this in a sort of the turn of the phrase, oh, he's gone mad, he's lost the plot. I mean, if we are seriously and genuinely and literally concluding that the incumbent US president is unhinged or is insane, as one of his former closest supporters, Marjorie Taylor Greene, put it overnight, then what does that mean for us? What does that mean for the world? And what needs to happen as a result? Because that is a serious, serious conclusion to reach, given the power, and we've seen the power, that that one man has at his fingertips. 0345 6060 973, or despite it all, despite all the evidence, I would say, to the contrary, are you still one of the people who thinks that there is some sort of method, even genius, in the way that Trump behaves? Did you see that post yesterday and think, ah, that's smart, that's a negotiating ploy? I'd love to hear from you if you did. Maybe you can reassure me that the US president isn't actually going mad. 0345 6060 973 for your thoughts on that. Let's come to David in South Woodford first up this morning. Morning, David.
Morning, Ben. I literally think he Trump is lashing out, and so he's the people around him. The Times of Israel reported that J.D. Vance phoned Netanyahu and blasted him for selling a easy war to Trump. So I think they're lashing out everywhere because it's not going their way.
And do you see that as just a sort of emotional response, David, or do you see that as a sign of a sort of mental instability on Trump's part?
I don't think he's mental. I think this is how he behaves when he doesn't get his way. Right. He lashes out, he swears. And it's not this threat of bombing the Iranians dark ages or stone age. It's not going to work. They know it's either do or die. They're fighting like cornered tigers. They know either they fight or they die. So it's not... The old Iran and the old Ayatollah was very restrained. They would orchestrate reprisals and stuff like that. They are now that either they're going to survive or not. So they're not going to be bothered if he says he's going to bomb them. They're going to carry on doing exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, because he started a war without any strategy or plan whatsoever for ending it, David, didn't he? And now he's in a mess. He doesn't, he's feeling the pressure internationally, but I don't think he cares particularly what other world leaders think. But he is, more pertinently for him, he's feeling the pressure at home. This is the year of the midterms. The Republicans already forecast to be at risk of losing the Senate, maybe the House of Representatives too. This war in America is becoming increasingly unpopular. A poll this weekend found more than 60% of Americans want it brought to a close now, even if the US hasn't actually achieved its objectives. And he can't find a way to bring it to a close because Iran has got him over a barrel of oil when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz. And you think he's lashing out. Lashing out is the minimum he's doing. Do you not think, given the language he's using and the way that he's writing and talking, there is a genuine prospect here that he is becoming more and more mentally unstable?
I don't think so. I just think this is how he behaves when he doesn't get his way. And also, what he's got the issue at home, he always said when he was, you know, running for elections, there would be America first.
Mm.
And the Americans are now realising it's Israel first. This is Israel's war, not America's war.
I don't think it is. It's Donald Trump that started the war, alongside Israel.
Mark Rubio made it clear they joined because Israel attacked.
I think, David, for what it's worth, Donald Trump doesn't do anything that Donald Trump doesn't want to do. I think he saw a sign of glory. I think he has a saviour complex. I think he saw a chance to free the people of Iran and become their hero, all of which has obviously failed to materialise. But that's what I think Donald Trump thought he was doing. This idea that he was sort of bullied into it by Bibi Netanyahu, I personally don't buy it. I know Rubio sort of alluded to something along those lines, but I've seen no evidence ever, personally, David, that Donald Trump does anything that Donald Trump doesn't think is in his interests. Thank you for the call, David. Good to have you on this morning. To Tracy in Ealing. Morning, Tracy. Do you see a sort of increasingly unhinged man in what Donald Trump's doing and saying?
Yes. I can't believe you were asking the question, is there method in his madness? We're way beyond that now. And I think he is so used to getting what he wants when he wants that the fact that this Iranian regime is not playing ball, he's just frustrated because he has no strategy to get them to change. He keeps making threats and then it goes over the line, mm-hmm. over the time limit. And he just, that's humiliating. And it just emboldens the Iranian regime, I would think, to see him making threats and not carrying them out. And it's the rest of us that are just getting the flak for it. It's just
we're all going to be filling the bill, aren't we, for this ongoing madness?
Exactly, we already are. Petrol is sky high.
you and me both up 20p a litre last time I filled it. But if we are genuinely saying, are we genuinely saying that the incumbent US president has gone mad, clinically mad?
Clinically mad. I'm not sure he's gone clinically mad. I mean, I think probably his age has sent him a bit more cranky than
I know people talk about sort of age-related illnesses. I don't see that. I don't see that in Trump at all. Maybe more with Biden. I do see an increasing instability and erraticness in the way that Donald Trump is behaving. I just wonder if we are saying that he is becoming more and more unhinged, to use the same word that's been thrown at him this morning. What needs to happen now, given that is, you know, the allegation that's being made? What does that mean? What needs to happen in terms of, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene says we need an intervention, but what does that look like?
Gosh, I'm actually going to agree with her, and she's quite unhinged, but she's right. I mean, I think all this with Donald Trump and where he's taken America is severely damaging to America. I've lost a ton of respect for America because I would have thought they would have never let somebody take their country where he's taken it, and the damage will be lasting after he's gone as well. I think they should have intervened a long time ago.
The damage to America's reputation, Tracy.
Absolutely, yeah. They look weak, and these what were we told about these checks and balances? They've been flimsy and nonsense.
Absolutely. The US Constitution, which they like to boast is one of the sort of most effective in the history of the world, it hasn't been able to stop somebody who increasingly resembles a dictator or a despot. It's a very, very good point. Tracy, lovely to talk to you. Happy Easter to you. David is in Bayswater. Hi, David.
Hi. Quick point or two. Yes. First of all, if he does manage to stop this war in a few days or whatever, it'll be a completely pyrrhic victory because he'll have strengthened the regime. He's destabilized the Middle East completely. He's killed thousands of people. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been wiped off the world economy. People have lost their jobs in poorer countries. There's a state of emergency declared in the Philippines, and other countries are having to ration. So it's having untold effects in countries which are very poor,
yep.
but we are not aware of. So I think we need to remember that. And I just think there's a degree of hypocrisy among Western commentators because we've courted his favor and we've enabled him in many ways. So for us to now to suddenly turn on him like this is slightly hypocritical, I find.
Well, how do you think we've enabled him, David?
Well, you're letting him use the bases. I know people say it's for defensive purposes, but I don't believe that. You can construe anything as defensive and it's really attacking. So I think that's completely hypocritical. Britain, if we had the ball, sorry to use that word, we should have just completely banned him from using them like Spain has. But we've just colluded with this a lot of the time, and now we're standing on our high horses condemning it. I find it is slightly rank hypocrisy.
So if we are yeah. concluding, and I'm not sure we're definitely there yet, but if we are of the view that Donald Trump is increasingly mad and increasingly dangerous, what more would you like our government to do about it? Because it's not just on the US, it's not just on the people around him to step in. I think there's very little chance of that happening. This might be something that the rest of the world needs to, that US allies need to respond to, David.
Yes, well, maybe go to the UN, get a resolution condemning it. That's what I know it won't stop him, but at least it's showing the world that we have moral standards. We don't just allow people to do things.
It's risky. Is it not risky though? Because if this is a man, if this is a sort of injured animal who's been backed out into a corner and is desperately lashing out, then there is an argument that says the worst thing you can do is push them even further into that corner.
Well, I think I think Trump treats politics like business. You say something and he'll forget about it in 2 or 3 days if you do something nice for him. So I think at least we could, what's the point of Britain being Britain? And, we fought that world war and everything and we can't stand up to terrible things and really speak out. What have we become if we can't stand up for what's right and speak out really, really hard against what's bad?
Because does it not just backfire? Is there not a risk that if Keir Starmer stands up tomorrow and says, I think the US president has lost the plot, he's dangerous and we will have nothing to do with it, or we're going to kick US troops off the UK bases as you proposed, David. But Donald Trump still has an almighty amount of power at his fingertips, including the power to do things that would seriously harm this country and all the people living here.
Well, ask the Second World War veterans what they fought for, and are we living up to those standards? Okay, we have to find a different way of existing.
They fought to keep this country free. And when I say Donald Trump poses a threat to us, I mean, he's not in the same way that Hitler did. I'm thinking about, he has the potential to end security cooperation. He might increase the tariffs on British imports and so on. But it's not the same as what happened in the Second World War. There's no direct threat to Britain's independence from Donald Trump.
Well, it's independence of thought and action because we're tied to his coattails. We're not doing what we know is morally right because we're afraid of his economic strength.
So cut the coattails, says David. And David, I've got to say, a lot of people will agree with you that a tougher stance is needed given what we're seeing from the Trump administration right now. Thank you for getting in touch this morning. David in Bayswater. Lots more of your calls to come in just a moment. 0345 6060 973, the number to join our conversation this morning. Let's get the news headlines here on LBC just before we talk more about Donald Trump. It's 10:31. It's Dominic Ellis.
Iran and the US say they've received proposals to end the conflict in the Middle East. The framework has been put together by Pakistan and includes an immediate ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. NHS England is urging patients not to put off seeking care ahead of a walkout by resident doctors tomorrow. Officials say people should attend planned appointments unless they've been contacted to reschedule. And another of Wireless Festival's main sponsors has pulled out over Kanye West headlining the event. Diageo has followed Pepsi in withdrawing support over the rapper's previous anti-Semitic remarks. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Your life's already digital. From banking and shopping to streaming and learning. So why does sorting government stuff still feel like such hard work? The government is introducing a new digital ID to make access to services quicker and more secure for everyone. But we need to hear from you. Your voice matters. Search Digital ID Consultation to have your say. Digital ID, making public services work for you.
Experience the perfect melt with Jarlsberg, like this deliciously simple mushroom toast. First, take generously buttered sourdough and toast with thyme and garlic. Next, sauté porcini mushrooms and load onto the bread with caramelized onions. Then gently melt sweet and nutty Jarlsberg. Flip onto the toast and enjoy. Proud sponsors of the Devil Wears Prada musical. Find more fashionably delicious recipes at jarlsberg.com/UK.
Hey babe, we seriously need to come back here together. You'd love Morocco. We went hiking in the Atlas Mountains yesterday. Got you a little something from the market too, mainly so I could use some of my 22kg baggage.
Hiya! Hi Ellie!
Anyways, I hope you're all good. I'll bell you later on the Wi-Fi. I want to show you the hotel. It's like a proper Riyadh with a spa. Miss you!
22 kilograms of baggage included. Nothing beats Jet 2. Subject to availability and conditions.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10:35. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC this morning. This comes in from Keith. Problem with our media is that you are desperate to normalise Trump like he is a master strategist. Funny that, isn't it? Some people thought Adolf Hitler was a master strategist too, driving us then and now into further crisis. I think, Keith, to be fair, you're right there. There is too often an attempt to make some sort of case that Donald Trump is actually a genius and that what looks like chaos and craziness is in fact some sort of strategic acumen or nous, when I don't think it is. And my interpretation of why so many people make that case is because the alternative is just so terrifying. It's a bit like at the start of the COVID pandemic. When I was quizzing government ministers at those press conferences, when I was a political reporter, every time I asked a sort of challenging question, I got a lot of abuse back then from people who said, get behind the government, they know what they're doing, we need to come together. And looking back on it, it became pretty clear, didn't it? They didn't know what they were doing. I think it was fear. It was fear that if the government didn't know what it was doing, that was a serious threat to all of us. So there had to be this kind of narrative that we have to put our faith in them. They are getting this right. And it's not dissimilar with Donald Trump, I think. I might be wrong. But I think the attempts to try and explain away his actions as some sort of intentional ploy or plan, sometimes, not always, but sometimes comes from a place of fear, because the alternative explanation is the most powerful man in the world, with an entire military and a nuclear arsenal at his disposal, has gone mad, or is in the process of becoming, as three newspaper headlines put it this morning, unhinged. And that is a really, really distressing prospect. So that's perhaps why we're so keen to say, no, it must be something else. There has to be another explanation. Maybe it's sort of misguided hope, rather than a sober assessment of what's actually going on here. It's 10:37. Let me come back to your calls on it. Do you see madness in Donald Trump's behaviour, or do you think there is some sort of method behind the way he is behaving? Natalie's called from Corsham in Wiltshire. Morning, Natalie. Oh, Natalie's called from out of space by the sounds of it. She might be on the Artemis mission. We'll come back to Natalie in just a moment. Let's go to Jamie in Hackney in the meantime. Jamie?
Hello there.
That's better. How are you, Jamie?
I'm good, thanks. I'm enjoying the sun. How are you?
I'm very well, Jamie. Talk to me about Donald Trump, because I am concerned about what seems to me to be an increasingly erratic behaviour from a man who's always been pretty erratic from the start.
I'd say he's erratic, but I think giving him that almost the credibility of saying that he's unhinged, I think takes all responsibility away from his own actions, if that makes sense. So I think he's proven himself to be mad time and time again. And the Epstein files have suggested that he's very mad. That dates back 20 years or more. So I think he is crazy, and I think he's a very dangerous man, but he's managed to surround himself by a bunch of sycophants that are doing whatever he likes.
That's the worry, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a worry. Lots of generals have been fired recently. We can only really imagine why, and I'm assuming that's because they don't quite want to do what he says. Mm. So I think he's in a very dangerous position, for sure.
And, you know, Trump round one, surrounded himself with sort of genuine, well, some of them, adults in the room who would say no to him. Trump 2.0 in this term has surrounded himself, as you say, Jamie, by sycophants. And that's the concern, because if Trump does do something genuinely sort of off the scale mad, like wakes up one day and says he wants to, you know, launch a nuke at Moscow, although given his penchant for Vladimir Putin, it's more likely he launches one at Paris, I think, at this point in time. Can we genuinely have confidence that the people around him say, no, Mr. President, that's completely and utterly balmy. There's no way in hell you can do that. Or do they say, at least some of them, good idea, Mr. President, show them your power, show them America's strength. That's the concern, isn't it? Is there anyone able or capable of standing in this man's way?
At the moment, I don't think there is, to be honest. And I think, considering all of the health issues that he's going through at the moment, you know, we can see bruises on his hands and things like that. He's obviously not in a well position, physical-wise. Are we looking at a position where people are trying to fill in his boots when he goes, so to speak? Are they going to try and fill in his shoes?
Well, JD Vance has certainly got his eye on the job.
Definitely, yeah. I'd be kind of worried about what comes next as well.
But Jamie, tell me more about when you say you almost feel like the kind of use of the language unhinged, and just to be clear, that's not my phrase. That's what people in the US are claiming, US politicians are claiming about Trump this morning. You feel that kind of, what, lets him off the hook in a way?
I think it takes away accountability off his own actions, and I think he's been doing these actions for a very long time, but obviously now he's in a position where he can almost do whatever he likes. Mm. Now we're seeing the real danger of Donald Trump come through, but he's been in that position for years, you know, spanning decades.
So you don't see any obvious change in the recent, you know, in recent weeks, recent statements, recent comments? You think this is just Trump being Trump?
I think it may be Trump being Trump, but with more irritability. Obviously, he's a man that certainly doesn't like the word no, as we can see from numerous, you know, news articles recently. He doesn't like being told no, and I think now that he's in a position where he's angry, and Iran are obviously trying to stand up to him as best as they can, that it's triggering him.
Yep. Jamie, great call. I've got to say, Maxine agrees with you. I don't think Trump has finally succumbed to madness, she writes. Rather, I think he developed a narcissistic personality in childhood and is currently behaving and reacting in a very typical and predictable way that narcissists do when ignored and or provoked. That from Maxine in Bamford. Is that what's going on here? That we're perhaps finally waking up at last to the reality of Donald Trump and the man that he really is. It's not that something's happened or something's changed. He's always been like, I don't know if I buy that, because I do see an increasing level of, well, you tell me what it is. Anger, desperation, I would say, inconsistency in the last few weeks. I do think it was always there, but it does seem to me it's got worse. See what Kevin in Oxford makes of it. Morning to you, Kevin.
Yes, morning, Ben. Yeah, I mean, I think unhinged is too strong. A narcissist, which he certainly is, he's an amazing narcissist. And also, he loves living rent-free in people's heads, which is quite an achievement, Ben. And he does that with a hell of a lot of people.
It's hard now, it's hard not to have him in your mind when he's the reason that we're all paying 20p more on our petrol and that our bills are going up, and that our food costs are going up.
If you let me finish, last year before, there's always some crisis, you know, we'll pay more for petrol. What I'm trying to say is that he really likes to be this guy that gets in people's heads. He likes to be unpredictable. He likes to be the maverick, you know, the kind of John Wayne of the president, you know. And he throws 10 coins up in the air, see how many come down his heads. So if I was the leader of Iran, I would sincerely worry about that guy. I think, you know what, this guy, I don't know which way he's going to go. Is he going to totally obliterate our country, or is he just bluffing?
But Kevin, is it not the case that one of the few things that is predictable about Donald Trump, based on recent evidence, is that he always backs down on the threats that he makes? He never follows through. That's
you say that, Ben. You say that, but he has bombed the living daylights out of Iran. He has hit oil plants. He has. He's hit Karg Island, decimated it apart from the oil. I mean, you know,
He's been going on about taking Karg Island for weeks. There was a 5-day deadline and there was a 2-day deadline. He just pushes the deadline back.
Also, you can only surmise, Ben. All of us can only surmise. He likes that. He likes people surmising about what's he going to do. I mean, you know, he's stripped Karg Island of all their military assets there. I mean, to put boots on the ground in Karg Island, it can't happen. There's got to be a lot of planning, a lot of a lot of, you know, logistics to, before he does. So really, Ben, he's living in people's heads rent-free, and we're all wondering what he's going to do next. You don't know, Ben. I don't know. But one thing I can guarantee you is that, you know, as an enemy, you would be thinking, which way is he going to go?
Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but it strikes me it doesn't matter whether you or I know what he's going to do next. What matters is whether he knows what he's going to do next. And I don't look at him as a man who is enacting out some sort of strategy or plan that he devised at the start of this war. I see a man who wakes up one day to the next, completely contradicts himself, doesn't have a clue what he's going to do that very day, and just sort of acts on a whim and a fancy. And so that troubles me.
I'm on your side there, Ben, but you've also got to realise that Barack Obama bombed Libya for 7 months without congressional support.
He bombed Libya for 7 months.
And he had no, and if you read his autobiography, it tells you that it was the biggest mistake of his life. He had no plan of action. He just bombed them for
and
seven months.
I just wonder if Donald Trump is going to make, he's in the process of making the biggest mistake of his life, because the midterms are coming up and this war is incredibly unpopular in America.
Well, do you know something? You wouldn't know how the midterms are going to go, because if you look at the policies, if you look at everything else, you look at the, like this country, they're saying that, you know, reform are well ahead on the polls. Do you believe that? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I do, Kevin, actually. When it's poll after poll after poll, I do believe it. And I do believe that Trump is in trouble if he doesn't bring to this war to a close pretty quickly, given how unpopular it is with a vast majority of Americans. 7 months out from the midterm elections is not a good place to be. And that is what will be troubling him far more than global oil prices or the plight of the world's poor or condemnation from countries like France and Spain. He doesn't care about that. But he does care about his political prospects, and he does care about being a winner. And right now, that is not what the Republicans are on track to be in the midterms this autumn, which I think is why Donald Trump is feeling so much pressure and why he's now lashing out. But is that a rational response to what he's doing, what he's, you know, what the pressure that he's under? Or do you see a man who is increasingly acting in a completely irrational and even unhinged way? Kevin says no. He wants people to talk about him. It's a plea for attention. Kevin, I wish it was that. I'm not convinced, sir, respectfully. Thank you for the call, though. Ben Kentish here on LBC. Lots of your calls coming on this. More of those to come in just a moment. It's 10:45.
This is LBC.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
At Wix, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked-up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh fun. Value the day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26th of the 3rd, 26. Morrison's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Ben Kentish.
Kevin just hit the nail on the head there, didn't he? Ultimately, by sort of posing the question, is Trump unpredictable in the way that he knows what he's doing next, but he leaves everybody else waiting and guessing, and that is an incredibly effective
negotiating an ploy and a power play? Or is he unpredictable in the sense that even he has no idea what he's going to do from one day to the next, which isn't strategic or clever or tactical? That is simply erratic and possibly even unhinged. And I've got to say, I see the latter. I don't see a man who has a plan that he wants to keep hidden and wants people to sort of be in the dark about. I see a man who himself has no idea what he is going to do or what he even thinks about things from one hour to the next. But what about you? Let's talk to Mark in lovely Budapest in Hungary this morning. Morning, Mark.
Good morning. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Mark, thank you. Talk to me about Donald Trump. Do you think he's lost the plot, or do you think that's just a simplistic explanation?
No, I don't. I just think it's a normal New York business negotiation style where you insult the opponent, you do everything you can to try to invoke a reaction, and that's what he's basically doing at the moment. This is all to invoke a reaction from Iran, also from on Ukraine and everything else like that. He's not a politician. He's not a diplomat. And he's very unusual in that respect. People just don't know the way this guy's working in terms of tactics. But these tactics start to work. I mean, the one thing I would say to you is don't forget 75 million people voted for him.
Yes.
In the UK, you've got a leader who only got 35% in Starmer. So put it in perspective, 75 million people voted for this guy, mm-hmm. and they knew who he was because the Democrats went after him for 4 years.
Nobody's disputed that he was democratically and fairly elected. That doesn't mean that he is now not increasingly unhinged.
Well, you say that. I mean, we've got a situation. I live in Budapest in Hungary where we have an election this weekend. We've got J.D. Vance coming here tomorrow to help the government get elected.
But someone being democratically elected does not mean that they are a sort of effective leader. I mean, the Tory party membership made Liz Truss the Prime Minister of this country. You don't say, oh, well, you know, she was picked as the Tory leader. It's fair enough. You say she was a disaster.
Yeah, but she wasn't elected. She didn't go through to everybody in order to get herself elected in that
respect. Boris Johnson was. That doesn't mean he was a good Prime Minister.
Boris Johnson was. He was very good at selling himself.
Yeah.
But Starmer's, I mean, I like the Jimmy Carr joke, but there's Asda in the Midlands looking for its manager.
All right, but Keir Starmer was also democratically elected in a landslide victory for his party.
Landslide at 35%?
Yeah. Because that's not how the system works.
35% votes. I know what you're saying, but come on. 35% votes and he was landslide elected.
Absolutely it was. You look at the majority in the House of Commons, that is the definition of a landslide.
I agree with you, but you could also argue that is a wrong way of electing people. I'm not going to argue proportional representation.
Well, yeah, we can have a conversation about electoral reform, and Mark, it sounds like we might be on the same page on it. But you cannot dispute that the largest majority in government in decades, 176 seats, was not a landslide win for Keir Starmer.
Was it a landslide win for him, or was it a rejection of the Conservative Party?
Well, you might say the same about Trump. You might say the election of Trump was a rejection of the Democrats.
Yeah, but the way the Democrats went after him, left, right and centre, and you got people on your channel who says he's a convicted felon, and you and I know that those charges were bogus. Absolutely bogus.
He was found in a civil court to have been guilty of a serious sexual offence.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
What he did is he settled out of court. He settled out of court in that respect, and he was never found guilty in the civil court on that thing.
He was.
He was settled out of court on that.
A jury verdict, May 2023, found Trump liable for sexually abusing somebody. So
civil matters in New York, I presume.
Yeah, it's still a verdict. It wasn't that he settled out of court. There was a verdict that found that he was guilty of serious sexual assault. You're right, it's not a criminal court. He doesn't have a criminal conviction, but a civil court jury did find that verdict to be true. Thank you, Mark. Let's talk to Paul in Croydon about Donald Trump. What's he up to, Paul? Is there a strategy here? Is there a method in the madness?
It's not so much a method, it's just his behaviour is very predictable. You know, all these characteristics have been pointed out about his behaviour. And if you apply them to everything he does, it all makes sense. You know, everything he does is transactional. He has a narcissistic, authoritarian trait to his personality. He cannot stand dissent. He fires them. And if you take the Iran thing that he's just done, he's obviously connected with big money in some way. say, the oil money. And we know the markets, you make more money when the markets fluctuate and there's uncertainty.
Well, there's certainly a lot of people getting very rich off what's been going on, Paul. I don't think we've got evidence that Donald Trump is or isn't one of them. But when you say everything he does is transactional, I mean, I agree and I disagree because, yeah, I think everything he does is self-interested. But when you say transactional, it almost suggests to me there's a degree of reason and thought and even perhaps sort of smartness behind what he's doing. And I don't see that. I see a man who is increasingly desperate and increasingly lashing out.
No, I agree with you. All he does in any situation is look for the deal. Where's the money?
Mm.
Whether it's Ukraine and he does a deal with the minerals and he wants Putin to, you know, settle where he is,
but
and he doesn't.
But what about this post yesterday, this expletive-filled, praise be to Allah, capital letters, I'm going to bomb your energy infrastructure post? I mean, does right. that not... If that doesn't resemble a man who's increasingly feeling the heat, to put it very mildly, then what does?
He may be, but that's that behaviour is... Mm. He's in a position of all power. I haven't seen any blowback from the American, the equivalent of their parliament. It's all about, it's not America doing it, it's always Trump's doing it.
Well, the leader of the Senate, admittedly, big critic of Donald Trump, Democrat called Chuck Schumer, says he is going insane. He's unhinged. So that's some pushback, but Paul, again, you're right, there's not a great deal of actual anybody standing up to him or standing in his way, which is a concern if he is, as we are, I think, increasingly concluded, an increasing threat to the rest of the world. Thank you, Paul. Danielle's called from Wolverhampton. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, are you okay?
I'm good, thank you, Danielle. Happy Easter to you. Far away.
Thank you. I think part of me is just kind of relating some of this. He's definitely unhinged, I would say. But I think some of this is kind of reflecting, similar to me, what happened in Hungary in terms of their Prime Minister kind of going amongst that gerrymandering in terms of that. I think his
Viktor
aim
Orban.
Was...
Mm.
I think there was this kind of aim with Project 25 to obviously get all of his team into, you know, the different states and so forth to make it hard for him to, for anybody to kind of go against him so that he could serve that third term. And I think obviously now all the votes are coming out in different areas that actually he's starting to lose some of those states to the Democrats,
yeah.
if I'm using my words correctly.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of going to pot. So now he's spitting his dummy out the pram. I think he was partially hoping that this war would kind of support him in keeping his side in the offices. And I think it's just gone to complete pot and now he's spitting his dummy out the pram.
Yeah, he's feeling the heat. He's feeling the pressure.
Yeah, most definitely. And you can see it. The sweat's starting to appear, like the panic.
Do you think he's still acting rationally? Do you think there's still a kind of coherence in his mind?
No, not at all in my eyes. I think it is literally just a case of he's doing now what he thinks is going to win him a vote, whatever he thinks is going to win. He's fully under the public eye. He's fully aware of what he's doing. But I think now it's coming more to light, especially from what I'm seeing online, whether that be reliable resource, I don't know. But
depends where you're seeing it, Daniel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If it's on the LBC website, you're all right. But thank you for the call. I agree with you. He's under pressure. He's increasingly acting erratically and inconsistently and perhaps even dangerously because he's desperate. And a desperate man in a powerful position is not a good combination. Thank you, Danielle. Stephen in Barnet, final word on this one before we move on and talk about the Green Party. Stephen, hi.
Hi there. Just not my main point, but a quick point. Starmer should have stood up to Trump because America never helped us in the Falklands War. They told Thatcher they wouldn't get involved. And Starmer should have hit back at Trump and said, where were you, mate, when we needed you? So that's just my sub-point. But my main point, is it possible, just consider, Trump knows exactly what he's doing and he's thinking only about his legacy, not his day-to-day minutiae of a pilot being shot down or a bit of oil price increase. But he's thinking 30 years how he's going to be remembered. Mm. He's had a consistent policy of make America great again. And he's following through with that. He's done Venezuela. He got really full of himself at the success of that mission. He's gone into Iran. I don't think he was bullied into it by anybody. He does what he wants to do. And he'll find a way to spin this, that he's got rid of a regime that terrorised the world for 47 years.
But, that's the key flaw in your argument, is the regime is completely still in power in Tehran.
No, he's put them back. He's put them back 40, 50 years in development of nuclear weapons and arms.
Israel took out Khomeini, Ayatollah Khomeini, and they just replaced him with his son. The Iranian regime is still there. What this war's legacy will be, I suspect, is going to be measured in months rather than years. And maybe that's part of the problem. Donald Trump knows he's got himself into a mess, and there's not anything obvious for him to show as a result.
Hang on. What mess? Does he care about the midterms? He's put his big, beautiful bill through.
Oh,
why does he care? He's not going to be voted in again.
Well, for two reasons.
His future is foreign policy only. He's not going to make any massive domestic changes now.
Two reasons I think he cares, Stephen. Firstly, and perhaps most importantly of all, he loves to see himself as a winner, and he will not want to be the Republican president that loses Congress and possibly the House of Representatives as well. But secondly, if he is still thinking rationally, there are still things he wants to do domestically that will get a hell of a lot harder if he loses control of Congress in November.
Like what? He's made the big tax cuts, and every president loses the midterm, like a by-election here. It's meaningless. He won the biggest majority in history.
But this man is obsessed with electoral success and polls and ratings and voting numbers. The idea that he doesn't care about the midterms. I'm not buying it, I'm afraid.
Okay, I think he cares about his legacy in 30 years' time.
Well, I'd suggest right now his legacy is looking increasingly negative. But you might be right that there is some logic. The logic is longer term than we're talking. Interesting. Stephen, thank you very much for wrapping up the conversation about Donald Trump. We're going to return to UK domestic politics after the news at 11 o'clock. Labour stepping its attacks on the Green Party up today. A sign, I think, that they're increasingly worried about the threat that Zach Polanski posts. But why are the Greens becoming so popular?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Iran and the United States say they've both received proposals to end the conflict in the Middle East. It's been put together by Pakistan and includes an immediate ceasefire and the potential reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump has threatened to blow up Iranian power plants if the strait isn't reopened by tomorrow. Expert in diplomacy and the Middle East, Naomi Bar-Yakov, is following developments for LBC.
We do know that the head of the army in Pakistan, Asim Munir, has been speaking overnight to the US Vice President, J.D. Vance, who's very keen to end the war. I think he never wanted to go to war. And to Abbas Araghchi, that's the foreign minister of Iran, that has been given US guarantees that he will not be assassinated because they want to negotiate with him.
Iran has said it won't be pressured by deadlines and won't reopen the Strait of Hormuz as part of any temporary ceasefire. NHS England is urging patients not to put off seeking care ahead of a six-day walkout by resident doctors starting tomorrow. Officials say patients should attend planned appointments unless they've been contacted to reschedule. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has called the action disappointing. Dr. Shivam Sharma is from the British Medical Association and insists people are not angry with them.
I think the patients are actually more frustrated at the healthcare system because they can see that they can't get their GP appointments, that they're waiting so long for getting seen in A&E, waiting in corridors with undignified care. That is simply not acceptable to anyone.
People receiving universal credit or estate pension will see an increase in their payments from today as a series of changes comes into force. Most benefits will go up by 3.8% and pensions will increase by 4.8%. The two-child benefit cap has also been scrapped. Another of Wireless Festival's main sponsors has pulled out over Kanye West headlining the event. Diageo has followed Pepsi in withdrawing support over the rapper's previous anti-Semitic remarks. West, also known as Ye, apologised earlier this year and blamed a bipolar episode. And the Artemis 2 crew are on track to fly by the moon this evening. The astronauts will catch a glimpse of the Apollo 12 and 14 landing sites while circling the lunar planet. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Babe, it's Jem. Just voice noting you because I'm so busy. I can't even type right now. I'm working on that big presentation for my new launch. I'm making it on Canva Mobile like you suggested. And it's making everything iconic. Sorry, it's a bit noisy, babes. Marv's is going off. Anyways, I'm going to ping the presentation to you now so you can see what I mean.
Yes, madam.
Gotta go, hun. Thanks for introducing me to Canva. Love ya.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
For the time, Ben Kentish in for James O'Brien here on LBC this Easter Monday. Very, very good morning to you and a very happy Easter Monday if you're just tuning in and joining me on the programme. We had a really interesting conversation about Iran in the last hour and what Donald Trump is doing and why he's doing it. We will bring you the very latest in about half an hour's time on the quite incredible rescue mission that saved a US airman from being captured in Iran and held as a prisoner of war. Been described as one of the most daring and risky operations in US military history. Get the very latest details on exactly how it unfolded. Papers this morning full of insight as to how that operation was planned and implemented. That's coming at half an hour's time. I do just want to talk about UK political matters for a while as well, though, this morning, because there's been a lot of focus on international events, and rightly so, not least of all because they have an enormous bearing on what happens back home. But there hasn't been a lot of focus on what is going on, I think, a little bit under the radar when it comes to the Green Party. Reforms surge in the polls. It's kind of emergence from nowhere to become a party that, at least according to quite a few opinion polls at the moment, is on course to become the next government, has been covered extensively. What's behind it? Is it just a protest movement? Can Nigel Farage genuinely be considered a credible prime minister? All those conversations being had over and over again. And again, rightly so. I mean, the polls suggest that they are on course to win power, so they need to be properly scrutinised. But the Greens have had a fraction of that coverage, despite the fact that they too have emerged from pretty much nowhere to become what seems to be an increasingly potent and powerful and relevant political force since the election of their new leader, Zach Polanski, late last year. And I just want to think it's worth dwelling on that for a while this morning. Not least of all because Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, has used this Easter Monday to step up his attacks on the Green Party, saying that voting for them would put the new workers' rights that Labour has introduced at risk. This is an article that Keir Starmer's written in The Guardian. No other party offers both the economic credibility and the political will to do this, he writes in The Guardian, when he talks about the workers' rights that Labour has brought in and part of the Employment Rights Bill. And as part of that piece, he specifically targets the Green Party, saying that voting Green would put those newfound rights at risk. Now, that's sort of, in and of itself, not that interesting. Party leaders attacking each other is just part and parcel of Westminster politics, isn't it? But it is interesting for the reason that this is just the latest example, as I see it, of Labour ratcheting up its attacks on the Greens. And the reason they're doing that quite clearly is because they increasingly see the Greens as a threat. It's not just reform they need to take on. It's not just the Nigel Farage's insurgency to their right that they're dealing with. It is also the fact that they now have an insurgent populist party to their left that is actually winning over quite a lot of people, particularly younger voters, that would, and until recently were, voting for the Labour Party. So Keir Starmer's got an almighty headache now. What does he do to win back voters from reform and also win back voters from the Greens? And until quite recently, the second part of that equation has been all but ignored by Downing Street. All the focus has been on taking on reform. That's why you've seen this lurch to the right. That's why you've seen increasingly sort of Farageian rhetoric on issues like immigration and integration. Because Labour has been desperate to win back the support that they were hemorrhaging to the right. But in doing so, not only have they ignored, but I would say they have also worsened the hemorrhaging of support that they are losing to the left. What's the Lib Dems? Now it's the Greens in particular that are benefiting. And it's young voters in particular that are driving that surge, driving that trend. 40% of 18 to 24-year-olds voted Labour back in 2024. If that election was held, if there was an election held tomorrow, that figure would halve. Labour would only win over 1 in 5 18 to 24-year-olds, 40% of whom would now vote Green. So what you are seeing en masse is this switching of support amongst younger voters in this country from Labour to the Green Party. And it's not just the young. Thousands upon thousands, millions perhaps, of older voters are also making that move. Is this just a short-term phenomenon? Is this just a protest at the way that the government is operating? Or do you think the Greens are here to stay? And if they are, then what is it in particular that you think is driving this groundwell of support for Zach Polanski and his party? If you're somebody who has made that switch or is toying with it, is contemplating it, pick up the phone this morning, dial 0345 6060 973 and tell me why. What it is that you think the Green Party are offering right now that Labour and the other parties aren't. And do you think this big surge in support for them is just a flash in the pan? It's just a short-lived kind of new leader boost that the Greens are getting since they elected Polanski? Or do you think they're here to stay? That they are genuinely going to become a serious force in British politics? And if they are, why? Because they haven't been in the past. They haven't been up until now, and something seemingly has changed. And I don't think you can just explain that by the change in leader. So what is it that is driving the Greens' success? 0345 6060973, that number once more. The latest YouGov poll, just if you're doubting what is going on, has the Greens in joint second place behind Reform. They're on 21%, with Labour on 17%. 21% for the Greens, 21% for Reform and the Tories. This is according to polling by former Tory Treasurer Michael Ashcroft. Labour behind on 17%. And again, it's gone a bit under the radar, hasn't it? I mean, it's all the focus on what's driving the support for Reform. Let's talk for a bit about what's going on the left of the spectrum and what's driving that support for the Greens as well. Get your calls coming in on that now. Just before I come to those, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, particularly if you are someone who would at least consider voting Green at the next election. Let's get the thoughts of Joe Twyman, director of polling agency Delta Poll. Joe, very good morning to you. How real do you think this surge in support for the Greens is? Or do you think what we are seeing is shallow and short-lived?
Well, the short answer is the longer term, we don't know, because these are very unusual circumstances. And if the last 10 to 15 years of British politics have taught us anything, it's that nothing can be taken for granted, but also nothing can be ruled out. I think what is happening, however, is it's a replication of what we saw with Reform. Around this time last year, you and I were talking about Reform being the big success story of the last few months, how they were surging in the polls, etc., etc., etc. And you can go back to see how the election of a new, or rather the selection of a new leader, specifically Nigel Farage in place of Richard Tice, had a huge change around in their fortunes. And it's very similar to the Greens. Politics is, yes, it's often about ideas and ideology and even delivery. But quite often it can be about momentum. And that's what the Greens have really achieved since the election of Zach Polanski as leader. Someone who is charismatic, someone who's very good on the media, and someone who's really been able to capture the zeitgeist. And we saw that in Gorton and Denton, where the Greens won. And we're now seeing it nationally. But as you quite rightly say, the key question is, can they turn that into electoral success in May in the local elections and longer term into national success at the general election? And that is a big question that remains unanswered.
Joe, when you say Zach Polanski has captured the zeitgeist, I mean, not disputing that for a minute, but what is it that he's doing or saying that you think is going down so well with so many voters?
Well, what he's able to do is articulate a very attractive alternative to the mainstream parties on the progressive left remain side of the political spectrum. Because up until now, we've heard a lot about anti-politics and the fact that Nigel Farage criticises continually what he describes as SW1 and the Westminster Village and the established parties. But that was very much for those on the right of the political spectrum. And so now, if you are anti mainstream politics. If you feel dissatisfied, distrusting and disapproving, not just of individual political parties, but of the political process generally, but you had more leanings towards the left and progressive feelings, then you didn't really have an alternative. But what Zach Polanski has been able to do very effectively is make it clear that there is a possible home for you with the Green Party. And really, it's at the moment less about what they represent and more about what they don't represent. And people may say, oh, well, that's a very shallow view of things, but it's essentially what the playbook Nigel Farage has been playing, and one that he's been playing very effectively.
And this comes back to the sort of key question: is this a protest movement? Is this just a sort of short-lived putting two fingers up at the Westminster establishment that come the next election will have faded into obscurity, Joe? Or do people genuinely see the Greens and Reform and Zach Polanski and Nigel Farage in particular as people that they actually want to go on and form the government of this country?
Well, that's an interesting question, and inevitably, of course, it varies from person to person. There will be some people for whom they genuinely believe in the kind of policies that that the Greens are putting forward, and they genuinely believe that they can be a viable party in government. But for many people, as I say, this is a reflection of dissatisfaction, distrust and disapproval of the main parties. And that's what we saw in Gorton and Denton. Mm. And it's very easy to overanalyze by-elections because they are very unusual. But the fact remains that the three main parties, so Conservative, Labour and Lib Dems, the only parties who have been involved with government in the last 100 or so years, those three parties manage less than 30% of the vote combined at that by-election.
Yes, which is quite stunning and unprecedented. Is that being driven, just focusing on the Greens in particular, Joe, how much of that is being driven by a surge in support amongst younger voters in particular?
Yes, younger voters who tend to be more progressive, who tend to be more liberal with a small L, who tend to be more left-wing, they are particularly drawn to the Greens. And policies around, for instance, the environment, but also things like housing are going to be massively important if the Greens are going to deliver that group at the general election. The difficulty that the Greens have that is less of an issue for Reform is that historically, at least, younger voters have been less likely to turn out to vote, whereas older voters, again, that tends to be Reform's core audience, they're more likely to vote. So it's one thing getting people to support you, and it's one thing getting people to say they would vote for you in the abstract construct of a survey instrument, but actually getting them to turn out is another battle entirely.
And Joe, just lastly, the fact that we now do have five parties basically level pegging, give or take a few points, in the polls, are we witnessing the death of two-party politics in this country?
Well, the death of two-party politics has often been overstated, but it's certainly, if the current trends continue, that certainly could be the case. And the reason that's particularly interesting is because, of course, it's not just five parties. It could potentially be six in Wales and Scotland. And where that gets really interesting is in our constituency-based system, you could have a situation where you have five or six parties vying for victory. And what that means is that every single vote counts, and the margin of victory in individual constituencies could be very, very small. That makes it very uncertain what the result will be. It really means everything is to play for.
Absolutely. Fascinating years ahead, Joe. Thank you for coming on the show this morning. Joe Twyman, director of polling agency Delta Poll. Over to you. What do you think explains why the Greens have suddenly started performing so well? What is it they're saying that perhaps is attractive to you? And is this just a flash in the pan, or is the Green Party now here to stay as a serious political force in this country? 0345 6060 973, as always, the number for all of your thoughts on that this morning. Your calls to come in just a moment. You listen to Ben Kentish right here on LBC, where the time is 11:17.
This is LBC. What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary's Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again. Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
People ask me, what's my good place? Down the park, having fun with Toby, my cockapoo. And knowing that my pension with Pensionbee is managed by experienced money managers. So, not chasing the stick then, Toby? No?
At Pensionbee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
11:19, straight to your calls on the Green Party. What is driving the increase in support and is it short-lived? Is it a flash in the pan or are you hopeful maybe that this is something that is going to be here to stay? This increase in the popularity of Zach Polanski and his party. Scott's on the line in Glasgow to kick us off on this morning. Morning, Scott.
Morning, Ben. I don't think it's a flash in the pan. I'll come to that in a wee second. But I think the reason that people are leaning towards the Green Party is they're providing a socialist alternative to an increasingly right-wing Labour Party. The Labour Party is no longer the party of socialism that it was when I was young or when my father was alive, who was a shop steward and a Labour Party activist. And I think people coming up now are looking at it and going, well, I don't have a socialist party to vote for. Sometimes you can't really get a piece of paper between the Tories and Labour in terms of some of the policies. So an actual socialist party to vote for becomes very attractive. And a flash in the pan... I've got two opinions on that. One, we saw this happen about 15, 20 years ago in Scotland when the SNP rose and became the socialist alternative to Labour here, as well as their support for independence. Mm-hmm. See, Green is similar to that. You know, they're a socialist alternative, but they also have the environmental leanings that people can attach to. The difference in Scotland is we have forced proportional representation in our parliament, whereas in Westminster you don't, which makes that first-past-the-post system a real barrier to a fourth party, a minority party, coming and showing real power. And really, that proportional representation system in Scotland gave the SNP the chance as a minority government to come in and prove that they could do a good job and make a difference. I think that's where Zach Polanski's got a bit of a wall to climb, because getting to the point where he actually has some element of power in the Westminster Parliament with its archaic voting system is a real challenge.
And yet, it's a very, very fair point, Scott, and yet Nigel Farage has done it from a starting point that was behind where the Greens are. In terms of he's built Reform from nothing to become a party that is now forecast, as things stand at least, and a lot could change, to win the next election. So there's no reason in theory, is there, that if he's been able to overcome the big hurdle that, as you absolutely rightly say, is first past the post, there's no reason in theory Zach Polanski can't do the same.
I agree, but to date, Farage hasn't actually delivered any electoral success. He's not actually stood in a major election, been able to retain his candidates long enough to get them to stand in an election. Sure.
But they are winning by-elections, as the Greens now are in Gorton and Denton. So it's not just a case of support being spread thinly across the country. They have now shown, both of those parties, that they have the power to win parliamentary seats.
Yeah, Plaid just won a by-election in Wales that they had no right to win. Right? By-elections are a very strange animal. I think I would love to see the Greens rise in England as a force. to challenge some of the right wing and even more extreme right wing.
Let me just ask you about that, Scott, because when you say Labour, you know, you want a socialist alternative to Labour. What would you like the Labour government to be doing that is more socialist than what they are?
So if you look at what they were planning to try and do to the benefit system and only got pulled back by a revolt from their own MPs.
This was cutting the disability benefits.
Let's be honest, if you're going to come and attack someone for trying to get some tax back in this country, going for the disabled and the ill, doesn't seem like the most attractive thing to me. I would rather see them get into the situation that we ensure that tax avoidance is dealt with before we start looking at benefits fraud.
What about stuff like beefing up employment rights, introducing new rights for renters, lifting 100,000 children out of poverty, investing in the NHS? I mean, those are the sorts of things that people would expect the Labour government to be doing, and they are.
Yes, and I don't disagree with any of those policies, particularly I love the fact that they're trying to catch up with some of the things that Scotland's been doing about child poverty. We've had a really good approach on child poverty in Scotland, just to see the rest of the UK start to really pursue that, because that's one of the worst ones. You know, I grew up in a what you'd call an inner city working class area with a lot of poverty around me, so anything that lifts kids up out of that is a real benefit. I see a lot of leanings towards big business and no real attack on wealth and tax avoidance, which the country could do with the income from.
And Zach Polanski talks a lot about that. Do you find it credible, though? I mean, you look at the Green Party's policies, you listen to Zach Polanski talk about the economy. I mean, to say it's got more holes than a Swiss cheese in it, Scott, is probably putting it politely. Quite a lot of it just doesn't add up at all.
He's a great orator. I think he's found himself in the position that he suddenly got more success than I think he maybe realised he was going to have. And he's now in a similar position to Farage on the far right, where they've now got to actually start making their policies stand up and cost up. And that's hard. That's a challenge. It's something that, you know, as I say, in Scotland, we saw the SNP make a bit of a pig's ear of in the first parliament. But then they got the hang of it. And that's the thing. They need to be in the situation where they start getting access to the sort of civil service levers that you need to put this stuff together.
And you're willing to give Zach Polanski more time to kind of, you know, sharpen those policies up and tweak them into a better place than they are now. Scott, interesting. Thank you very, very much indeed. Let's talk to Joshua in Birmingham about what's going on. What's driving the support for the Greens, you think, Joshua? Morning.
Morning, Ben. So I think that he's a lot like Farage, except for and I'm just going to give my personal views. They're not necessarily what I think. So he comes across a lot like Farage in terms of the populism. He's speaking the language of 2026, and I don't think populism's always bad. The difference for me is that he comes across as a decent, honest, and non-embittered person. I get the sense that Farage is the opposite of all of those things. So that's a populist, or a man who can speak the language of 2026, but he actually comes across as a decent person. I think that appeals to a lot of people.
What's the language of 2026? Is that the populism bit?
The ability to speak to social media.
This is my issue with him, Joshua. Is that,
no, can I just...
Yeah, go on, you carry on, and then I'll come back.
I was going to say, his relationship with the media isn't one of deference, unlike the other major parties. He, in my view, he treats the media, the political media, which I don't believe is there for news. I believe it's there for clicks and content. He treats them with the contempt that I think they deserve to be treated with. He's combative with them. He's got his facts in a row every time they speak to him. He's honest. I watched an interview with Nick Robinson where Nick Robinson cornered him on something. Asked him about that, didn't ask Farage about the anti-Semitic allegations, by the way. He asked Polanski about why he said a woman's breast could be increased in size, and Polanski just said, look, it was a silly mistake. Owned it. That's, no other politicians do that at the moment. And I personally, I'm a Labour person. I believe that a Labour government over the long term will be best for the country. But I'm prepared to give Polanski a hearing because of all of the things that I just mentioned.
Can you see yourself potentially voting Green rather than Labour at the next election?
So for me, I'm going to vote purely tactically. Whatever, there's another dimension, and it's kind of what I was going to say. Whatever keeps Nigel Farage out of office, I will do. I don't mind voting Green or Labour, whatever keeps Nigel Farage out of office. And I do believe that that's where most people in my kind of situated with my mindset are going to go. They're going to do whatever they can to keep Farage out of office, because looking at the USA, we know that Farage is a baby Trump, and we can see what Trump's doing over there, and I don't think many of us want that here. The last thing I was just going to say, sorry for going on,
that's
but I just
right.
wanted to get all this
stuff.
Out.
You go on.
Yeah, my concern with Polanski or the Green Party is that the people behind him. So what you're going to get over the next few years, just like you got with Jeremy Corbyn, is you're going to get a bunch of the media focusing on his councillors. So it's going to be this Muslim councillor said this thing about Israel. This Muslim councillor said this thing about Israel. You're going to see a trickling of these stories coming out over the next few years, just like we do with Farage, where, you know, every week you see that five councillors have been kicked out of the party because they're racist, bigots or sexist. You know, it's going to be the other way. But the media, the right-wing media, are going to focus on it more, and they've got the biggest megaphones. But that's my only concern.
But is this not a point? Just as Reform, I would say, has an issue with extremists in its midst, the Greens have also had evidence of that. There's also evidence of that in the Greens, Josh, isn't there? Candidates making anti-Semitic or outlandish or absurd statements. So, and it's just as appropriate that, you know, that's scrutinised as it is with Reform. Can I just...
Right, listen. Let me just come back on that. Very, very quickly.
Sure.
As long as it is extremism and it's not just somebody saying something they don't like about Israel.
It's not. I mean, plenty of people
criticize. I'm not saying in the cases that have happened now. I'm saying in the cases that are, if any cases come out in future, as long as it's about.
I think anyone's been kicked out of a party for just criticising Israel. It does go beyond that. But can I just ask you about the populism point, Joshua? I think this might be where we fundamentally disagree. I don't think populism is ever a good thing, because to me, populism is giving people false hope by coming up with what are ultimately empty promises about how their lives will be so much better in every way if you just vote for that person or that party. And there's no substance behind it. And that is a critique that is absolutely rightly been levelled at Nigel Farage, and still should be, because a lot of Reform's policies don't add up. But it's absolutely, in my view, also applicable to the Greens.
I agree with you on many levels there, but I think that Zach Polanski's got the honesty and decency to own his mistakes, and I believe his followers, his fans or whatever, will allow him time for those mistakes.
But my point, Joshua, sorry to jump in there, what he is peddling right now, at least, is false hope. He's promising us unicorns, and there's no substance or detail or costings or all the rest of it behind what he is offering. And therefore, it doesn't stand the test of scrutiny. And the same is true of Farage. They are very similar in that sense.
So I don't know which policy you're talking about in particular. I do know that we're quite far away from any policy platforms being, you know, released.
Tax the rich and everything will be better. It's all well and good saying tax the rich. How are you going to do it? What taxes are you going to increase? How are you going to stop them leaving and moving their money abroad? And the answers just aren't there. There's just these sort of big headline messages about taxing rich and investing in the 99%, and there's no detail.
Hold on, though. I'm not here to speak for Zach Polanski, so I don't know what his answers are going to be. Do I believe that he will have credible answers at the time?
Mm.
Possibly, given his performances in the media so far. But what I will say is, every day I listen to the news and LBC and commentary, and we always, one common theme is that we're all aware that big corporations, I'm not talking about individual billionaires here, we're aware that big corporations are getting away with blue of how they're robbing us blind. Somebody has to come in and do something about
that. And that's fine, and that's the Zach Polanski view, Joshua. But again, you need detail. You can't just say, we're going to tax big corporations. You have to spell out how you're going to do that and what you're going to do when they close their UK businesses or when they move jobs abroad or when they simply move their money. Again, I'm not saying it's the wrong policy. There's debate to be had there. But you've got to spell out the detail. You can't just say tax the rich. Or it just becomes a kind of empty gimmick. And I think what we've got from the Greens at the moment are outlines of things that are basically lacking any detail or kind of credibility when it comes to policies. Which, I take your point, Joshua, and Scott said the same. Give them more time. Zach Polanski's only been leader for a few months. But I'm sceptical of any politician who promises the world without explaining how they're going to do it. And I think Nigel Farage and Zach Polanski are, at this point in time at least, both guilty of doing that. Really interesting perspective. Joshua, thank you very much for calling in this morning. You're not the only youngish, by the sounds of it, Labour voter that's toying with voting Green. More of your calls to come on the Greens in a couple of minutes' time. And we'll find out just how US Special Forces
rescued an airman that had been stranded behind enemy lines in Iran. Let's get the latest news headlines first here on LBC with Dominic Ellis.
Iran and the United States say they've received Pakistani proposals to end their war. The framework includes an immediate ceasefire and the Strait of Hormuz would be reopened. NHS England is urging people not to put off seeking medical care ahead of a 6-day walkout by resident doctors starting tomorrow. It'll be the 15th walkout during the BMA's 3-year dispute with the government over jobs and pay. And from today, millions more workers will be able to claim statutory sick pay. The benefit was previously only available to those who earned more than £125 a week. LBC weather, a settled day for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
The future isn't always clear, but at Yorkshire Building Society, we help you focus on the milestones that matter. The little moments and the big days. The times they need you and the moments they grow. Focus on what matters, saving for their future and yours, with a cash ISA from Yorkshire Building Society. Rated a Which recommended provider for savings accounts. Search YBS Cash ISAs to open an account with us.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Waverunner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Knockhatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at knockhatch.com.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:35 the time. Here's Don. The Greens represent hope. They care. At a time when the three majority parties are demonising people with disabilities and other minority groups, they listen. And that means a lot. I'm not anti-establishment, says Don. You can care about people and still appreciate a sense of tradition and order. Natalie says, Ben, I've joined the Greens because of Zach to help nudge Labour to the left. I'd vote Green in the general election if viable, but anyone to keep Farage out. Zach offers hope, positive vision, whereas Farage is negative and blame. I just want to slightly take on this positive vision stuff. Yeah, of course, there's a lot of hope about a better future and a better world and a richer country and so on. You look at some of the detail, I just wonder whether a party, for example, that cannot answer a question as basic as do you think the UK should stay in NATO, is anywhere near being suitable for any position of power right now. That is a fundamental question inherent to the defence of this nation. And I'd almost respect them more if they just came out and said, no, we would leave NATO. I mean, I think that's completely and utterly nuts, but at least it's a clear position. But prevaricating about whether or not you think we should stay in a military alliance that makes us a darn sight more safe than we would be outside it is just one indication, I think, of how much further they need to go to come up with a credible policy platform. It's not just to sort of tax the rich stuff. On serious fundamental questions, then you get this policy yesterday, they want to slash the speed limit on motorways to 55 miles an hour and make it harder for people to park their cars outside their homes. I mean, I get the environmental element here, but seriously? Is that serious policy? It's not to me. And they got a lot of work to do there, if you ask me, to turn empty promises into credible plans. But
You know, clearly they're doing something right. Clearly a lot of people disagree with me. 40% of young voters, if there was an election tomorrow, would vote for them regardless of all of that. What is it that's driving that surge in support for the Greens? And do you think this increase in their popularity is here to stay? Or is it a short-lived flash in the pan? 0345 606 0973. Lots of people texting in, so they joined the Green Party since Zach Polanski became leader. We'd love to hear from you. Maggie and others, if you pick up the phone, let me know what it was that led you to make that decision. We'll talk to Benedict in Chingford, John and Crystal Palace in just a moment. First, though, let's get the latest details on the quite incredible rescue of a US weapons officer who was stranded for almost 2 days behind enemy lines in Iran after his fighter jet was shot down. The pilot that he was flying alongside was rescued quite swiftly, but he was stranded for what we believe is about 36 hours before a mission on Sunday night by US Special Forces to rescue him. Been described as one of the most audacious and risky in US military history. And this morning, details emerging of just how that operation was planned and executed. Andrew Fox is a research fellow at the Henry Jackson Society, Middle East strategy expert and a former paratrooper as well. Andrew, very good morning to you. As I say, lots of details in the papers about just how they got that airman back. Just talk us through the sort of outline of the operation that unfolded.
So it's an example of very highly trained military professionals doing their job to the highest standards. There are whole units in the United States military dedicated to this kind of personnel recovery, as it's called. And as the pilot ejected, he would have had very little on him. He'd have had some rations, maybe a sidearm. But then most importantly, he'd have had his beacon and a radio to be able to communicate with his rescuers. Whatever the circumstances, he felt the need that he had to get high. So he climbed a 7,000-foot altitude ridgeline. All the time, he was being hunted by the IRGC with a $60,000 bounty on his head. And that's when the Special Forces teams kicked straight into gear. They would have located him as quickly as possible. They would have kept eyes on him as long as they could. They would have enacted deception campaigns to keep the IRGC guessing as to his location and possible extraction route. And then they needed to enact the actual rescue mission itself, which involved flying C-130 Hercules to a landing strip. They then launched helicopters to go and rescue him from the ridgeline. Returned to their landing strip, the C-130s got bogged in, and so they had to call in an emergency aircraft in reserve to complete the extraction and then destroyed the equipment they'd left behind on the ground.
It was three aircraft that weren't able to. They were meant to extract him and got their wheels stuck in the sand. Actually, I mean, is that a bit of a failure and an error, or is that just the sort of things that can unfold in these kinds of operations?
Yeah, unfortunately, there is something in war called friction, and it makes even the easiest things really difficult to do. And you can never really predict what's going to go wrong, and that's why you contingency plan for everything. But the C-130 Hercules is designed for short takeoffs and landings. It's been used heavily in Africa on these kinds of desert strips. So I think they just got unlucky in this instance, but they had to work with what they had, given the proximity of that rough airstrip to where the pilot was hiding.
And this the sort of story about how he climbed this 7,000-foot ridgeline and hid in a crevice, I mean, it's sort of Hollywood stuff. Given he was already injured, having been harmed in the ejection from the plane, Andrew, how would he have been detected? Tell us more, if you would, about these beacons. Because as I understand it, yes, they can help the sort of person who's missing communicate with their unit, but they also would be detected by the enemy, in this case, the IRGC.
They can, and that's why he had to delay operating his beacon until he was in a location that he could kind of protect himself by hiding and that he knew he could be evacuated from. That's the key part here, is that you need to call them into where you're going to evacuate from. I believe there was a radio that had encryption as well, so that would have kind of negated the need to use that beacon straight away. But look, the pilots go through an extensive resistance to interrogation and survival, escape and evacuation course. And, you know, as I said right at the top, this is just a great example of the training works, and high-end professionals know what they're doing.
There's a fascinating line in the New York Times about when he did make contact with the US military. One of the things he said in response to sort of being asked how he was, "God is good." And this kind of set alarm bells ringing, because they interpreted that as something that someone from the Iranian regime might have said, and then had to put in place this whole train of events to actually make sure that it was really him and that he was alone, rather than his beacon or his radio having been seized by the enemy forces.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, perhaps he could have saved his prayers for his recovery. But look, bottom line is it worked. They were able to confirm it was him. They were able to get in there and extract him successfully. It was, as far as we know, nobody else being injured. Yes, they've lost up to $300 million worth of aircraft, but what price of human life? And it shows the extent to which certainly Western forces treasure the lives of their soldiers and will do everything they can to get them home.
Andrew, there's one line in the New York Times reporting on this that fascinated me, and obviously none of us know because it's probably classified, but they say, as they were trying to confirm that it was actually him, military officials were assisted by the CIA, which used a special piece of technology unique to the agency to locate the airman hiding in the mountain crevice and confirm his identity. Now, I fully appreciate we're fully into the realms of speculation here, but what sort of unique technology might the CIA have used to do that?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And again, we're completely conjecturing here. But look, there are different kinds of intelligence. There could have been satellite intelligence where they're able to zoom in from an altitude. It could have been a spy plane overflying. The U-2's got some incredible cameras on it. I remember from Afghanistan, the mapping that thing used to produce was incredibly accurate from a very high altitude. It could be signals intelligence where they're able to, you know, track his path. And work out where he came from and where he was going. So there's a whole variety of different things across the electromagnetic spectrum that they could have used.
Fascinating stuff. Andrew, thank you very much for coming on. Andrew Fox, Research Fellow at the Henry Jackson Society, Middle East Strategy Expert and a former paratrooper as well. Lots of your calls coming in on the Green Party and why they seem to be performing so well. Anthony says, I joined the Greens earlier this year, but I'm going to quit them soon. I did it as my own infantile response to something that Labour did, but I've settled down now, put my calm grown-up head on, and I'm now fully behind Labour. We need them to get in for a second term if we want to see any progress away from the disaster caused by the Tories and their Lib Dem austerity coalition. Which just goes back to the question, is the surge in support that we're seeing for Zach Polanski's party, is it just a sort of short-lived protest at what people see as a lurch to the right by the Labour government? Or do you think that is, that's sort of disrespectful almost to the success, potentially the longer term success, that Zach Polanski is bringing about for his party? Is this something that is here to stay, this surge in support? More of your calls to come on that in just a moment. Ben Kentish here in for James O'Brien this Easter Monday on LBC. The time, 11:45.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is a shameful, this is a shambles.
Straight to the point.
How was that allowed to happen?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Show some evidence, Minister.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, Just ask Zoopla.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
Right, back to your calls before we move on to other matters at 12, when we are going to talk about another prime ministerial statement this weekend, this one on Kanye West and whether or not he should be able to perform at a major London music festival this summer, given his great track record of expressing support for the Nazi Party. More on that to come in about 50 minutes' time. For now, we're talking about the Green Party and whether their support is a flash in the pan or whether they are here to stay and what it is specifically that's making them more popular than they've ever been in this country. And Benedict's called from Chingford to talk about exactly that. Benedict.
Hi, Ben. How
Hi, Benedict.
Doing?
Yeah, I'm good, sir. Thank you very much indeed. Lots of people have joined the Greens from the Labour Party. I understand you've gone the other way.
No, I've also joined the Greens.
Oh, you've joined the Greens as well?
Yeah.
It's just that you've joined the Labour Party. Okay.
Well, that's unfortunate. Talk to your researcher.
Right. So you joined the Greens. Were you in Labour before or you've never been a party member?
I was in Labour before, yes. Right. I am, however, not allowed to actually vote in UK general elections because I'm German. So this is one of the ways where I feel like I can kind of be a part of the political system. I can obviously vote in local elections and all of that stuff. But I think one of the reasons why the Greens are being so popular right now is because Labour is not a good tactical vote anymore. I think the Greens have proven that with their popularity, that the kind of idea of voting Labour to keep the Tories out isn't actually going to definitely get you the results that you want. And so Green becomes kind of that alternative for a lot of people who before maybe weren't actually really interested in Labour, but voted Labour because it was the only way to keep the Tories back then and now Reform at bay. I think a lot of these people were already interested in Green Party politics, but they voted kind of like, they kind of like held their nose a bit and voted Labour because they were like, okay, fine, well, you know, the lesser of two evils. And there is a lot of people, I think, a lot of groups that Labour kind of alienated almost. So, for example, I'm gay. I'm a gay man. Queer people in large won't support Labour anymore because of their treatment of trans people. So you lose a big demographic chunk. That chunk is gone. They're just not voting for you anymore.
I'd add young people to that list, Benedict. Millions and millions of young people who I think feel very, very, very let down indeed by a Labour government that sort of said the right things. And yet, as far as a lot of young people are concerned, they don't feel like it's actually matched that rhetoric with action to help.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I'm not a young person anymore in that sense. I'm 31.
Oh, that's young. Gosh, Benedict. Oh, 31 isn't young. We all might as well all go home.
I feel like I'm slowly reaching into that middle bracket.
I turned 35 the last couple of weeks ago. I feel you. I'm well on the way to middle age. But I think 31 is definitely still young.
Yeah, and like I think there is more. Like obviously, like we said, young people, we said queer people, LGBTQ+ groups, and all of that. Muslims are having a bit of a hard time voting Labour, or had a bit of a hard time voting Labour. I think that's again a chunk that's just gone
because of Gaza specifically.
Yeah, because of Gaza, pro-EU people, like Green has a very clear standpoint of we're going to rejoin the EU, we're going to get closer to that. Labour is kind of like tippy-toeing around it.
So what we're saying, really, is that the Greens are benefiting from the fact that Labour has alienated an awful lot of its core voter groups.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think a lot of these people, like I said before, there was probably a lot of people there who voted Labour in a more tactical sense because it was to keep the others out. But now that there is actually a viable alternative, even if you're looking at tactical voting, if you're looking at the latest polls, you know, tied with Reform, pretty much always ahead of Labour over the last couple of months, those kind of things, you know, then you go, well, why? I don't need to vote Labour, who I actually don't agree with a lot of policies.
There's a party that I actually like more and that is now increasingly, you know, credible. Fascinating. Benedict, thank you so much. John's on the line in Crystal Palace. John.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, John.
I think he's popular because he got a simple message in 99%, basically 1%.
Harassing messages. And,
oh, John, I'm really sorry, sir. Your line's a little bit dodgy. I'm going to try and get that cleaned up and get you back on in just a couple of minutes' time. Let's go to another John, different part of the country. John's up in Chesterfield. Morning, John.
Hello, Ben. Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, John, thank you. Hope you're having a good Easter Monday this bank holiday weekend.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sweeping the lawn.
Sweeping the lawn?
Sweeping the lawn, yeah.
Shouldn't you be mowing the lawn?
No, shouldn't be.
What are you sweeping it for? Why isn't he sweeping?
Debris from all the storm weather.
Ah, fair enough.
Anyway,
I wondered what you were doing. I thought you were sort of preparing a cricket pitch or something. Anyway,
no,
John, Zach Polanski, why is he doing so well, do you think?
Yeah, I think he's doing well because, I mean, I'm 64 and I've been a member of the Green Party for 8 years. And I think he's just brought it to another level. The problem he's got is the money behind the opposition, the money behind reform, going through especially the media. And the example I gave your research was this thing about Zach Polanski increasing women's breast size is brought up again and again and again. Reform have an MP who's been in prison for hitting his girlfriend. Mm. And that's just brushed off by Reform. Oh, I don't matter. But they continue to bring up these attacks. Then you've got big foreign money behind Reform. Well, GB News, funded by foreign donors. That's basically their own channel. And the BBC backs it up. So on Question Time, you're getting Nadine Dorries on, who's classed as a broadcaster. But she's actually a Reform supporter. And it's this media influence that I think, considering with all that, and Zach Polanski is still coming through well, he's doing a really great job.
Partly because he's kind of bypassed the mainstream media to an extent, John, hasn't he? He's got quite an effective social media strategy. He talks to people directly. But in terms of the policies, I mean, do you agree with potentially leaving NATO, for example?
I don't think he's actually said he's going to leave NATO. What he's said, from what I understand, is that it doesn't work how they want it to do, and we need to look at doing it another way. And
yeah,
when you look at what's happened in the Gulf, it would make sense to move all the support to European countries, maybe North Atlantic treaty, but a Northern Europe treaty organisation.
But until there is an alternative and a replacement, the fact that he cannot commit to staying in NATO, I personally find a little bit worrying, to be honest, John. And then
but
you've
he's
got...
Not said,
all
he's
right,
not going to stay in. What he said is he will wait, be in it while as it is.
I don't
but
think
then look to move away from.
I mean, I had Natalie Bennett on the programme a few weeks ago, and I asked her about seven times, will the Greens commit to staying in NATO? And she, as a former leader, couldn't say yes. She just wouldn't answer it. Let's try another couple of policies then. An amnesty for all illegal migrants, including giving them a home, a job and free use of the NHS. Is that a good idea?
In to an extent. But, I mean, again, it's going to get absolutely massacred by the right-wing media, because it will be portrayed in a certain way, which may not be the way that he's actually saying it.
Open border? I mean, I appreciate that they're not going to open
totally
the border.
He's totally said loads of times that he's not looking at open borders.
But he is going to... The Greens have committed to this policy of giving anybody who is living here illegally a home, a job and use of the NHS. And it begs the question, well, which homes and which jobs? Because there's an awful lot of young people right now who are struggling to get either of these, who are in this country legally.
There are. That's true. And the reason there's not the homes is because the big money that's behind companies companies like Reform are coming from like your huge property development companies, the huge oil and gas companies.
Sure.
But in that context,
it's not a great idea to just give a free house to millions of people who are living in this country illegally.
But like you just said, there are no free houses to give them.
Well, so it's a nonsense policy. We agree, John.
You've got to put ideas out there because
but
you say
you've got to
this
make
is
sense
how we
before you
I mean, the amount
there.
Of nonsense policies coming from Reform.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. And they need more scrutiny. And I think they should be getting more scrutiny than they are. But the same applies to your party, I would say.
Yeah, I'm quite happy for scrutiny of Green policies. But it should be done in a fair way.
And
it shouldn't be done
happening.
By... Not at all. It shouldn't be done by people who, like the oil and gas industry, massively pay Reform. So obviously they're not going to scrutinise the Greens in a fair way. Yeah, they get a lot of their money from oil and gas.
All right. Thank you, John, for the call. Double check that. That's John in Chesterfield. Interesting perspective from a Green Party member. Glad you called in, John. Thank you. Edinburgh, William's called in to talk more about what's going on. William, morning.
Morning. First of all, if you bear with me, I know I haven't got much time, but I wanted to
You've
say...
You've got a couple of minutes, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, first of all, I think in terms of rejoining the European Union, which is what Zach wants to do, I think we should focus on the next best thing, or they should, because we weren't meant to leave the single market and the customs union, and that should be a correction that should be made, which wasn't a part of the ambiguous choice of leave or remain. and because that's the next best thing after rejoining the Erasmus scheme. And secondly, I mean, is his manifesto, is he really planning on giving illegal immigrants a free home? I don't think that's the case. I think maybe that's been misrepresented.
It's current Green Party policy. Whether it will be in the manifesto come the next election, I suspect you're right. Zach Polanski will realise how absurd and unpopular that would be and ditch it. But it is currently Green Party policy.
Is it not policy? Isn't the correct term asylum seekers, though? Because right now, they're not really getting that, are they? They're just getting basic accommodation and then pocket money. They can't work.
The key thing is here, we're getting slightly into the weeds, but it's important. The key point is it includes people who have had their asylum claim rejected. So if you come to this country, you claim asylum, you're found to have no legitimate grounds whatsoever to stay here, the Greens would let you stay, and more than that, they'd find you a job and let you use the NHS. Which I would say will encourage all sorts of other people, more people, to try and come here illegally, because they know, if Zach Polanski is Prime Minister, that they can stay even if they have no right to.
Well, if they have a job, does that not mean they then start paying taxes? Because then that would give them...
Where are they all going to live? Where are these free homes that Zach Polanski wants to give to failed asylum seekers?
Well, the honest answer to that is, I don't know.
Maybe
he doesn't know. But then again, though, if what we're talking about is true, there's not a question of us having to build more homes.
Yes.
And I think if we do,
we need homes for the millions of young people that desperately need them, not for the people who have come here to claim asylum and been told they have no right to. That's a very strange priority list on the Green Party's part, I would say.
Well, the challenge to that policy is give houses to both people, both members of the community, such as young people looking for homes and people who are fleeing war and persecution.
But they're not. But if they were fleeing war and persecution, then they wouldn't have been rejected in their asylum claim, would they?
Well, maybe not. However, though, I don't think you and I really know how it works, because the trouble is it's an unfair system, I think. And then again, though, they may say they're fleeing war and persecution, but they might not be able to prove it.
If someone comes here from Germany and says, I'm claiming asylum in this country, and the Home Office says, don't be ridiculous, you've come from Germany, you're not being persecuted at all, you're German, rejects them, Zach Polanski gives them a free house. It's a ridiculous policy, as are quite a few of the Green ones. And yet, as I say, clearly a lot of people either disagree with me or are willing to overlook that for now, at least, in order to give their backing. I think it's hope. He is offering people a sense of hope, however misplaced it might be. William, thank you very much indeed. We're going to move on after news and talk about whether a Nazi rapper should be allowed to perform in London.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Iran and the US say they've received a Pakistani proposal to end the conflict in the Middle East. The framework includes an immediate ceasefire and the Strait of Hormuz would be reopened. Iran says it is reviewing the plan by mediators, but won't be pressured by deadlines. The defence analyst Professor Michael Clark says that he's doubtful the ceasefire proposal will amount to anything.
My guess would be that this proposal won't consist of all that much from the American point of view. I mean, President Trump is looking for a way out, and I think he'll settle for forms of words which won't stand too much scrutiny, but will be enough to get him out, to declare victory and leave. That's clearly what he wants to do.
NHS England is urging people not to be put off by seeking medical care ahead of a 6-day walkout by resident doctors starting tomorrow. The action will be the British Medical Association's 15th strike in their 3-year dispute with the government over jobs and pay. 3 men have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a man was attacked outside a bar in Bournemouth. Officers were called to reports of an assault in Carminster Road in the early hours of this morning. A man who was in his 40s died at the scene. Parents in Northern Ireland who lose a baby through miscarriage will be given paid leave from today. It's the first place in the UK to offer the 2-week entitlement. The Conservatives have called for Waitrose to reinstate a worker who was sacked for stopping a shoplifter trying to take Easter eggs. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, says the case reflects a wider issue of offenders having little fear of consequences. Waitrose says the reporting of the case does not cover the full facts of the situation. And 4 astronauts are just hours away from reaching a part of space never explored before. The crew of Artemis 2 will be flying past the dark side of the moon later tonight. They won't be able to speak with mission control temporarily, though, as radio communications will be blocked by the moon. James Carpenter is from the European Space Agency.
Ultimately, the plan is to be able to ferry people to the moon very regularly on a safe basis. And who knows, perhaps even tourists will be fortunate one day to visit the moon. And of course, we would like that to be safe, just as air travel is today.
LBC weather, a settled afternoon for large parts of the UK, staying dry with sunny spells for most, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It is 12:03. It's Monday afternoon, Easter bank holiday. Ben Kentish in for James O'Brien right here on LBC. Lovely to have your company this afternoon. And thank you very much for tuning in. Always good to have you with us. We're going to talk for the next hour about what, as things stand, will take place this July in Finsbury Park in London, where, pending some sort of change, a man who declared himself only last year to be a Nazi, adding, "I love Hitler," will be cheered and whooped by thousands upon thousands of people on a stage at the Wireless Music Festival. That man is the rapper Kanye West, who now goes by the name Ye, Y-E that is, and he has been invited, inexplicably and shamefully, in my opinion, to perform at the Wireless Festival as a headline act this summer. And that has gone down particularly badly, as you would expect, with Britain's Jewish community and others who say that somebody who has expressed views like that as recently as last year should not be invited to perform at a major London music festival. And yesterday, Keir Starmer added that his name to the list of people who are criticising that decision, saying he was very concerned about the prospect of Kanye West being welcomed and cheered as he performs at Wireless. I want your thoughts this hour on whether a self-declared Nazi-supporting rapper should be allowed to headline a music festival in this country. Now, Kanye West has since apologised. He took out a full-page newspaper advert apologising to the people he offended and insisting he wasn't a Nazi. But this wasn't a one-off post. This wasn't a sort of flash-in-the-pan outburst of anti-Jewish hatred that could be explained away by, well, I don't know, Kanye West points to his mental health struggles. This is something that we have seen and heard from Kanye West over the course of several years. Back in 2022, he was posting rants about Jewish people and their alleged control of the media and the music industry. Then he descended into full-blown support for Nazism, praising Hitler. "I love Hitler, I am a Nazi." He started selling T-shirts with those sorts of slogans. He posted swastikas. There are videos of him doing Nazi salutes. This is not a one-off. This is a man who has repeatedly told us, in no uncertain terms, that he supports the Nazis. And forgive me for not taking his fake apology at face value just yet, because the evidence to the contrary is overwhelming. Kanye West says, "I'm not a Nazi." He told us multiple times over the course of about 3 years that he was. So this should disqualify him, shouldn't it? Let's be honest, from performing in the UK in any capacity. I don't think he should be allowed to come here, certainly not to perform and headline a major London music festival. But there is a bit of a contradiction here. There is a bit of a conversation to be had, I think, about whether we need to separate the artist from the art. Because we do that with other people. We do that, for example, with Roald Dahl, beloved children's author, whose books are still read in this nation's schools, despite the fact that the man who wrote them was a notorious anti-Semite, who said things like, "There is a trait in the Jewish character that does provoke animosity," who declared himself to be certainly anti-Israel and added, "I have become anti-Semitic." His family, in more recent years following his death, have apologised for his anti-Semitism and distanced themselves from those comments, rightly so. But it doesn't mean we don't read James and the Giant Peach or The Big Friendly Giant in schools. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't read them to my son, just because the man that wrote them clearly was a nasty piece of work and hated Jews. You go back a bit further. Wagner, known to be a Nazi sympathiser. Coco Chanel and Hugo Boss weren't just sympathisers. Coco Chanel alleged to have been a Nazi agent in France. Hugo Boss was a Nazi party member, reportedly, yet people still wear clothes proudly bearing their names. So you could say there is a bit of a double standard here. If you're wearing the shirt, a shirt with the name of a Nazi member, or a bag with the name of an actual Nazi agent, when you go and listen to some bloke who posted positively about Hitler on social media, then have we got this the wrong way around? Do we need to separate the art, whether that's fashion, or whether it's music, or whether it's literature, from the people responsible for it? And I think to an extent we do. And that's why I'm not saying for a minute that nobody should ever listen to Kanye West again. I'm not even saying that his songs shouldn't be played on streaming platforms or on the radio. Although ideally the ones about hating Jews wouldn't get an airing. I'm not saying that for a minute. But there is, because there is a separation between art and the people who produce it. In the same way, I'm not going to demand that schools remove all their Roald Dahl books or everybody burn their Coco Chanel handbags. That would be ridiculous. The difference for me, and the reason that I don't think Kanye West should be allowed to perform at the Wireless Festival this summer, is the performative element of it. It's the fact that a live performance is not just a celebration of the art or the music. It is a celebration of the man himself. The people who go to watch that performance won't just be singing or rapping along with Kanye West. They will be cheering and whooping him when he comes on stage, throughout his set, at the end of the performance. And the prospect of tens of thousands of people in our capital city cheering and hollering a man who only last year was writing, "I am a Nazi, I love Hitler," on social media is beyond grim, if you ask me. It's beyond grim, particularly in the context of a country where there is an increasing amount of anti-Semitism. A lot of Jewish people are feeling very, very concerned. Allowing a man in that context, or any context for that matter, to be given a hero's welcome in London just cannot be allowed to happen, if you ask me. I think it is absolutely astonishing. Astonishing that the organisers of Wireless thought it was a good idea to invite Kanye West. They should be thoroughly ashamed of that decision. I think it's right that Pepsi, which is the main funder, the main advertiser at that festival, has withdrawn their support. Let's be honest, probably because they feared the bad PR more than because they thought this was the right thing to do, but so be it. Either way, that's the right decision. And then we come to Keir Starmer, wading into this row yesterday by claiming he believes it's very concerning that Kanye West is, as things stand, going to be allowed to perform in London. Now, I had mixed feelings when I read that statement, because I agree with the Prime Minister, and I thought it was right that he came out and said that. But that's nowhere near enough. It's nowhere near enough if you are Prime Minister just to point at something and go, "Well, that's wrong, isn't it? That's bad. That's concerning. That shouldn't happen." If only Keir Starmer knew somebody in a position of power who might be able to do something about this. If only he had some friends in a position like, I don't know, Home Secretary or maybe even Prime Minister, who might be able to not just sit there pointing at things, pointing out why they're wrong, but actually act on them. So, yes, all right, Keir Starmer's right to call this out. He's right to criticise the decision. But, Prime Minister, you are the leader of this country. What was the point of all the effort of becoming Prime Minister if you're just going to sit there lamenting or decrying the things that you don't like? What's the point of holding the office or having the position that you hold if you are not going to use the power that you have to do good as you see it? And if good as you see it is Kanye West not being able to headline the Wireless Festival this July, you're the Prime Minister, mate. Make it happen. And you can do that. You have the power to do that. It's all well and good Downing Street putting out statements to Sunday newspapers like The Sun on Sunday, saying the Prime Minister is very concerned about this. It's not enough. What are you actually going to do? How are you actually going to act on that concern? And there's two very clear things that Keir Starmer could do. The first one is directly call up the Wireless organisers and say, this is not on. Or if he doesn't want to do it personally, get the Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy to do it. This is not the sort of headline act that we want to see at UK music festivals. And if that's seen as undue influence in matters that are not for the government, well, I think that's nonsense. But there is a second possibility, and that is take the matter out of the Wireless Festival organisers' hands. Back in 2009, a Dutch politician called Geert Wilders was banned from coming to the UK because he is a far-right Islamophobe. and the Home Secretary at that time, Jackie Smith, ruled that his presence in this country was not conducive to community cohesion, that his presence in Britain would do more harm than good. If we apply that to Dutch politicians, then surely we have to apply it to rappers who are self-declared Hitler supporters. So that's what the government could do. If the Wireless Festival won't withdraw this invitation, as they clearly should, if you ask me, then it's over the government to take the matter out of their hands. It's over to Shabana Mahmood to say, we do not want people coming to this country who, in their own words, repeated over several years, are Nazis, who have ranted repeatedly about Jewish people, who have done Nazi salutes on their social media. They will not be allowed to come to this country. They will not be able to perform in this country. We will not allow the prospect of tens of thousands of people going to cheer and celebrate and laud a man with that track record of anti-Jewish racism and hatred. They could do that. They haven't done it yet, because it's easier just to issue strongly worded statements to Sunday newspapers than actually stand up for your principles and do something about it. Let's hope they do something about it, but it really shouldn't come to it. It really should not have got this far, because he never should have been invited in the first place. And when the feelings of the Jewish community in particular, to the fact that London festivals are now hosting openly declared Nazis, was made clear, Wireless should have acted quickly, as the sponsors, Pepsi, did, and withdrawn the invitation. That's my view on it anyway. And if they won't, and they don't, then the government needs to intervene and say Kanye West will not be granted a visa to perform in this country for at least some time. I'm not saying never again. If the apology does prove to be genuine and he makes amends and he builds a lot of bridges that have been burnt through his Nazi support, then maybe in 5, 10, 15 years' time, there will be a rethink. But given that only last year he was making the statements that I just mentioned, far, far too soon, far, far too early, shame on Wireless. And if they don't act, and I'll give them time before I judge them too harshly for not doing so, but if they don't act, then shame on the government for allowing it to go ahead as well. My take on it. Because yes, you can divorce art and you can divorce the artists, but that's very different to a live performance where tens of thousands of people will cheer in a park in our capital city, a Nazi, in his own admission, a Nazi, until recently. What do you make of it though? Should a self-declared Nazi, like Kanye West, be allowed to perform at a major UK music festival? And if the invitation isn't rescinded, should the government ban him from coming to this country to do just that? Let me know your thoughts this morning. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Are you with me on this? Is it completely out of order and inappropriate for Kanye West to perform at the Wireless Festival this summer? Or do you think that actually there needs to be a complete distinction drawn between the art, in this case the music, and the man responsible for it, in this case Kanye West, in the same way as reading Roald Dahl's books doesn't mean you condone his anti-Semitism? You might say that going to watch Kanye West perform doesn't mean you condone his Nazism. I challenge that, but love to hear your views on it. 0345 6060 973. Those are already coming in. Come to your thoughts in just a couple of minutes' time. Ben Kentish here on LBC, in for James O'Brien this Easter Monday. It's 12:50.
This is LBC.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
At
Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh 5 a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26 of the 3rd, 26. Morrison's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Did you cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Oh, 2?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
1218, lots of sad things about Kanye West's descent into Nazism. But on a personal note, I would have been one of the first people buying the tickets for this event. I'm a big fan of Kanye West. Still on my running playlist. I'm not going to apologise for that. And I don't think I should suddenly stop listening to his music. But I'm certainly not going to be buying tickets to go and see the guy. And I don't think anybody else should be able to either. Given that he is now a self-declared, recently denied, admittedly, but still for a while, a self-declared Nazi and Hitler supporter. Let me come to your thoughts about it. Jan is on the line in Hammersmith this afternoon. Afternoon, Jan.
Hi, Ben. Absolutely, he should not, I repeat, should not be given the right to put one foot on this soil. He's a bad influence on so many young people whose heads are being turned by the right now. And it is a problem. It's a big problem. And I really hope that Labour do the right thing. I was saying to your researcher, on my grandparents' side, one of my lineage, they were Jewish. And, you know, I heard all the stories of the Second World War because of my age. There are loads of people alive today who had either grandparents or parents who fought in the Second World War, and they should be educating their young, their grandchildren, the dangers and what it really, truly means to support
Absolutely.
Nazism.
Absolutely.
It was the most heinous, heinous war. You know, it was a world war fought by many different countries against this evil, and it is evil. It, you know, the torture of people in the camps, the deaths of people, it was unbelievable cruelty. And until we educate, actually educate our young to what they are turning to, I don't know, you know, governments have got to start taking control of this. Mm. Keir Starmer has got to start putting teams together from all different sections and going to schools and teach children. And believe you me, Ben, they are willing to listen. They want to hear the stories. I promise you now, I've seen it with my own eyes, the absolute respect they have given when they know the reality.
That it's vital, that education, particularly as the generation of people who survived the Nazi camps diminishes by the week. So important, in fact, more important than ever, that we don't forget what they and their families went through. And just on that, Jen, you say people in this country fought against the Nazis. You're right, of course. A lot of people in this country lost relatives, lost parents, grandparents to the Nazis. Finsbury Park, where this festival is going to be taking place, is, you know, down the road from Stamford Hill, where one of the biggest Orthodox Jewish communities in this country lives. How will they feel walking past that park, hearing thousands of people cheering and whooping and celebrating a man who last year was claiming that the guy and the party, the regime that murdered 6 million of their ancestors was right and he loved them for doing so?
I agree. And I think, Ben, you know, I mean, obviously it would cost millions and it's unfortunately not, I don't suppose, going to happen. But for me, I would take, say, six formers or those, you know, leaving senior school, going on to college. I would, if possible, take as many as I could to the death camps just to show them the reality. Because sometimes people cannot imagine. They don't have that
it feels very
until
distant.
They see it.
It feels very historic, absolutely. And there's a lot of charities like Holocaust Educational Trust that do great work in this area. It is, I think, a compulsory part of the curriculum, and rightly so. But you're right, Jan.
you know, maybe that is what is necessary to really hammer home the atrocities and the horrors of what happened. In the meantime, not letting people who praised those responsible for those horrors and did Nazi salutes on social media last year, not letting them come and be celebrated in our capital city seems like a pretty good idea to me. And you as well. Thank you, Jan. To TJ in Sutton. TJ, what should happen here, do you think? Afternoon.
Afternoon, Ben. Hope all is well. Yeah, I just was listening driving. I just felt like, I don't know, I feel like you've maybe, like, misappropriated the situation a little bit, because it's either just these bad remarks and offensive things have happened, and he's realised and apologised and made room to better himself for it, alongside what you have to consider as well is his bipolar diagnosis. Kanye West is someone that is bipolar. Yeah, he's had a plethora of outlandish comments coming back from George Bush doesn't care about black people to going up on the stage
but
and snatching the mic
being
off Taylor
respectfully,
Swift.
And a lot of bipolar, I know people who are bipolar, a lot of people are bipolar. Yeah. None of the ones that I know are Nazi supporters. Being bipolar
does not
make you hate Jews.
No, but being bipolar can cause you to come out with things that you wouldn't normally, or you wouldn't once under sound mind, or you're not having a mental attack.
It does not make you anti-Semitic, TJ. And I think it's offensive to people with mental health problems to excuse outright Nazism as just saying, oh, well, he's bipolar. There are plenty of people who are bipolar. There are plenty of people who have very severe mental illnesses and don't become rabid, rampant anti-Semites.
There are plenty of people that do. There are plenty of people that have bipolar that do that. There are plenty of people that have Tourette's that say offensive things and people that don't. So just because you know people that don't,
this was not a one-off outburst. This was not a Tourette-style outburst where something slipped out of Kanye West's mind that he didn't want to slip out. This was several years of repeated rants about Jews in the music industry, specific people he had an issue with, Hitler supporters, Hitler supporting, Nazi T-shirts being put on sale on his website, songs about hating Jews, swastika display. You're demeaning it and you're diminishing it by saying this was just a sort of inadvertent slip. And it clearly wasn't.
And did you read his apology?
Yes.
So if you read his apology, you would see that he clearly defined why he did all of this and why it was a prolonged period. There's things that happened to him from him losing his Yeezy deal, from him having issues with his family, where he felt that it was a coordinated effort from people who all happened to be from the same religion.
Yeah, because he's an anti-Semite, TJ. Because bad things happened to him, and because he's an anti-Semite, he blamed the Jews. And you seem to think that's credible.
No, it's not credible. There's logic there. He's apologised for it, so he should be allowed
right,
to come.
Right, so if, I don't know, if some Muslim people are not very nice to me, or I have a boss who's Muslim and he's horrible, and I spend 3 years ranting on social media about how much I hate Muslims, you go, oh, well, you know, you had some reason.
If you apologise for it, and then you reason that because I was going through something, I have a serious mental health condition, and this is why I've done that, then yes, there would be some people that would be happy to forgive you and some people that wouldn't. And as you can see from the Wireless Festival, it's sold out. He's selling out arenas around the world. There are people that disagree with you and that will always disagree with you.
And you think you think it's a good thing that hundreds of thousands of people are rushing to praise and clap and cheer a man who spent 3 years telling us he was a Nazi?
And I will be there. Very good.
You'll be there?
Yep.
Why will you be there, TJ?
Because I support people being allowed to make a mistake. He's not the only example of an entertainer, a politician, or human being that has put his foot in his mouth and then apologised for it.
He hasn't put his foot in him. It's 3 years this went on, TJ.
Yes, no, but he's explained this. He's went to sat down with Jewish rabbis and Jewish community and explained and apologised, and they've forgiven him for it. So who are you?
Have they? The Jewish country?
Yes,
Right, and the
people he sat with, there's a rabbi that he spoke with. Go pull up what he said.
And the fact that the Jewish community, many parts of the Jewish community in this country, are very, very disturbed by the fact that this guy will be performing in London. You just don't care.
Not all of them. There's some people that don't like it, some people that do. So what I'm saying is, when you're giving a story, give it. Don't give it in spots. Give it in the timeline that it happens. He's apologized. He hasn't since said anything. He's since got medical help, and nothing has happened since. And this
since,
doesn't define him.
3 months.
Kanye West is one of the biggest artists of all time.
Yeah.
All time. This 3 year period of him being mentally unwell does not define him. And it doesn't define him to a lot of people.
It does. Well, it should do.
It should.
No, it shouldn't. We
do vehemently, DJ, because if being a self-declared Nazi doesn't define you, however good your music is, then I don't know what will. I honestly don't know what will. And to be honest, I'm quite concerned by how quick you are to jump to his defence, to take at face value the words of a man who has, as I say, to dismiss it as a kind of one-off inadvertent foot in the mouth when it went on for years and it was repeated and it was abhorrent. I think you are seriously, seriously dismissing the severity of what you did.
Right, the Hitler stuff was, yeah, that was a period where he went extreme. The other anti-Semitic arguments that he had about, oh, Jews, quote-unquote, Jews controlling the industry or Jews having unfair power. He's not the only entertainer. There's hundreds that have come up with this rhetoric.
So you think there's something... the mask is slipping here, TJ. You basically think he might be onto something.
No, there's logic there. You can't say it's 100%
unfavorable. The mask is... This is why you're so keen to defend him, TJ. This is why you're so keen to go and cheer him. Because you think some of what he said about Jews was right.
And anyone else that thinks there's logic in what he said...
Okay, the mask has slipped. The mask has slipped, TJ. The mask has slipped. You think he was right. You think he was right to an extent about Jews in the media, don't you?
Anti-Semite.
Yeah? You think he was right?
No, I don't think he's right. I think there's logic in what he said. The three major labels...
All right, we'll leave that there, because I think you've made yourself very, very clear. This isn't about Kanye West. The reason you are... I was slightly suspicious, TJ, to be honest, about why you were so quick to defend him. Why you were so desperate to take at face value all his excuses and his apologism. And there we have it. Because ultimately, quite a lot of what he said about thinking that Jews unfairly treat people in the media and the music industry, in your words, there's logic to it. We'll leave that one there, because I think the true reasons, as I say, for why you're so keen to defend him have become a bit apparent, sadly. Let's talk to Oliver in Reading about all of this. Hi, Oliver.
Hello. How are we doing?
I'm good, Oliver, thank you. What do you make of
Kanye
West?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, got you loud and clear. What should happen to Kanye West?
Can you hear me okay, Ben?
Yeah, I can, but I didn't think you can hear me, Oliver. Are you there?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, gosh, this is like you can kill your gran and she can't get the phone working. We'll come back to Oliver. I think there might be a bit of a delay on the line. Mixed opinions coming in here. I've got to say, there are people who say, legitimately, you've got to divorce the performer from the performance, and Kanye West makes great music. I would not disagree with that for a moment. But I go back to my point. There's a big difference between listening to Kanye West music in the section of your own home, or even listening to it on the radio, maybe. I'm not saying ban all his songs from ever being played ever again. But I do think going and celebrating, as TJ was going to do, and cheering him at a live performance is a very, very different prospect. And TJ's right to say, look, he has apologised, and this hasn't happened since the apology. It was only a few months ago. If he goes another 5 years, and he builds bridges with the Jewish community, and he genuinely atones, and he proves time and time again, just like he praised Hitler time and time again, that he is truly repentful and regretful, people deserve second chances. Absolutely. But they've got to do their time. They've got to prove that they have genuinely reformed. It's all well and good paying for a whole page newspaper advert saying, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't really mean it, when you spent 3 years praising Hitler. I want to see more of it. I want to see more time pass before I'm personally willing to give Kanye West the benefit of the doubt. And I think TJ is, in my view at least, hasty in doing so, given that we haven't actually seen a great deal of remorse at all, apart from one apology paid for in a newspaper. What do you think, though? Should he be allowed to take part in this music festival in London? Keir Starmer says it's very concerning. Oh, well, a good Prime Minister. What are you going to do about it? Should the Prime Minister do anything about it, in your view? More of your calls on that to come in a couple of minutes' time. Let's get the news headlines first. 12:30 the time. David Dom.
Iranian and US officials are reviewing a proposal put forward by mediators from Pakistan to end the Middle East conflict. That includes an immediate ceasefire and the Strait of Hormuz reopening. The NHS is urging patients not to put off seeking care during a walkout by resident doctors this week. Members of the BMA are going on strike for 6 days in their dispute over pay and jobs. And three men have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a man was attacked outside a bar in Bournemouth. The victim, who's in his 40s from Christchurch, died at the scene early this morning. LBC weather, a mostly dry and bright afternoon with some light rain further north, some winds in the west and a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. and the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Did you cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Oh, 2?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33, for what it's worth, TJ, not alone in wanting to give some credence to Kanye West's anti-Semitic comments about Jews in the music industry and the media. You look at the posts that he made, even the ones that praised Hitler and said how much he liked the Nazis, and you look at the sheer number of people that liked them or commented on them approvingly. More scary than the fact that he made them in the first place is the sheer number of people who reacted endorsing them on social media. Tons of your calls coming in on this about whether Kanye West should be allowed to perform at the Wireless Festival in London. A source close as you can, Mayor of London, has got in touch, actually, to say that the London Stadium was apparently approached to host a Kanye concert this summer, and it was refused by the Mayor of London because of likely community concerns and reputational risk to London, which is the right decision, I would say. Quite why the wireless organisers didn't take the same approach, anyone's guess. Come back to your thoughts on it in just a moment. First, let's talk to Phil Rosenberg, President of the Board of Deputies of British Jews. Phil, good to have you with us this morning. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. What do you make of the decision to openly invite Kanye West to perform at this festival in Finsbury Park in July?
It's absolutely the wrong decision. We are at a time of rising hatred, including anti-Semitism. Just a couple of weeks ago, we saw the arson attack against ambulances in Golders Green, in the heart of the Jewish community. A few months ago, we saw the deadliest attack on the Jewish community since medieval times at Heaton Park Synagogue. And there's this kind of rise of anti-Semitism and different forms of hatred. So to have someone who has described themselves as a Nazi released a song called Heil Hitler, and about the 400-year experience of enslavement by black people, said it was like a choice. He's a deeply offensive person and has said deeply offensive things. And it's a real problem that he's been chosen to headline the festival for 3 days.
How much weight do you give to the apology, Phil? TJ, our previous caller, say, he's apologised, you know, give him a second chance. What's the big deal? He has apologised. He has met with rabbis and publicly sort of put videos out of that to try and make amends, he says. Do we give any weight to that?
Ben, I think I'm very much with where you described it a few minutes ago. It is obviously welcome that there's an apology, but we'd really need to see that over a longer period of time, that genuine remorse. I mean, we have a lot of sympathy for the fact that he has challenges with mental health and bipolar disorder. But the problem is that in the past, his management has clearly been unable to protect him from doing these things, if to the extent he hasn't got control. And it should be said that people with bipolar disorder don't habitually go around saying these deeply offensive things against different communities. So we'd want to see, like you said, Ben, a longer period of remorse shown before he's given the main stage at major festivals.
Can I ask you, Phil, about Keir Starmer getting involved in this debate yesterday, saying it was very concerning that Kanye West had been invited to perform in London? What did you make of the statement the Prime Minister put up?
I welcome Keir Starmer's intervention, and indeed the intervention of the Mayor of London, as you just described it as well. I think it's really important we see that leadership from our politicians. And we've said that if this is going ahead, which we really hope it won't, the government will step in like the Australian government did to block Kanye West coming into the country. We think that would be the right decision. And clearly the Prime Minister's words kind of lean in that direction. But really the responsibility for this is with Wireless Festival, who shouldn't have invited him in the first place. And I don't know if you've had any luck, but for the last 7 days, broadcasters across the media have been trying to invite Wireless to give an account of themselves. Melvin Benn, the managing director of Festival Republic, seems to be running for cover whilst profiteering from racism. We'd really want to see those people at Wireless held to account.
Obviously, I agree with you about the sentiment of Keir Starmer's statement. He says anti-Semitism in any form is abhorrent, must be confronted firmly wherever it appears. Everyone has a responsibility to ensure that Britain is a place where Jewish people feel safe. I mean, given that, given he thinks it needs to be confronted firmly, given that he thinks everyone has a responsibility to keep Jewish people safe, do you not think he should have come out already and said, if this does go ahead, this invitation, we will act in the way that you've just described? The government hasn't yet said it will do that, and I think it should, and I wonder why it hasn't.
I think that there might be legal challenges with prejudging a visa application that hasn't yet come in, so I'm hopeful that that is the government being responsible about doing this in the right way. We've certainly made our thoughts clear to the government on this point. And, you know, following the Prime Minister's intervention, we've seen a number of the major sponsors, Pepsi, Diageo, I just read as I was coming on, PayPal, pulling out. So we want to see others, Budweiser, Green Coach, Drip, other companies that are still sponsoring it, doing the right thing and showing their determination to challenge racism.
And I fully appreciate you won't want to go into the details of private conversations, but do you get the sense from the government, Phil, just in broad terms, that they are receptive to the idea of acting if the Wireless organisers refuse to do so?
Well, I think the Prime Minister's statement shows the direction of travel, potentially, but as I understand it from the government, there hasn't been a visa application from Kanye West yet, so... So we will see. But actually, the government shouldn't be forced to do this. We would want the Wireless Festival to do the right thing. You know, in the end, Ben, they have a charter which speaks about opposing discrimination, including on the basis of race and religion. So they're breaching their own charter with this invitation. We want music to be a thing that brings people together in a diverse city like London. And having an artist who's made offensive comments about Jewish people, about black people, absolutely the wrong message in a diverse city like ours.
Thank you for coming on. Philip Rosenberg, President of the Board of Deputies of British Jews. Do you agree? Not many people getting in touch so far to say Kanye West should be allowed to perform. If that is your view, 03456060973. Koye is in Liverpool this afternoon. Afternoon, Koye.
Afternoon, Ben.
What I mean, Phil, they're saying if the Wireless Festival doesn't act, Kanye West's visa should not be accepted if he does apply. Okay, I mean, I think that sounds like a sensible position, doesn't it?
It is. It is a sensible position. But what I was saying earlier is that the invitation alone, it shows us how squared we've got things in society. With this Overton window we all keep talking about, we're now in at a time where it seems we want to debate everything, things that were common knowledge, what no one would have disputed 10, 20 years ago, is all up now. We don't know what racism is. We don't know what anti-Semitism is. Yeah. We don't know what transphobia is. The guy that wrote Father Ted could be defended robustly, non-crime incident. We use so many words to confuse society to the point where people like the rabbi said just beautifully, they want to profiteering from racism. People now just feel it's cool, actually, to be racist. You can say rubbish things about Muslims. They want to dominate by praying in the Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks it's a debate. All of these things would have been cut off.
The sort of where we draw the line between acceptable and unacceptable has been dangerously blurred.
it has been dangerously blurred, Ben. It's been dangerously blurred. That it, no one should question that Jewish people will feel unsafe with Kanye there. If the same way you, no one should question that Muslim people will feel unsafe to have Nick Timothy as their justice minister.
Yep.
You know, all those things are clear. When someone says things, even if they've apologized, like you said, we need to see genuine.
It's funny you mention that, because as you were talking about how the unacceptable has become acceptable, the same example came into my head, Kurt. The shadow justice secretary saying that Muslims praying in Trafalgar Square is an act of domination. If someone had said that 10 years ago, they would have been booted out of frontline politics, and that would have been in their political career. You say it now, and your party leader leaps to your defence.
Exactly. And in fact, that even boosts your popularity.
Yep. Absolutely. I think it's spot on. It's spot on. Although I would hope that at any point in time, saying things like "I love Hitler" and "the Nazis were right" would have been on the unacceptable side of the line. But you're right; it's being blurred. It's being blurred. We are too quick now to defend and justify or excuse or apologise for ultimately different forms of racism and hatred when they occur. Kaya, lovely to talk to you. Happy Easter to you. Thank you for calling in. David's in Norwich this afternoon. David,
hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good, sir. Thank you. Far away.
Interesting conversation. Through my work in the music industry, I've met Kanye on three occasions. Two, when he was managed by Scooter Braun and married to Kim. One, post that. The situation which I found the difference to him was there was quite a rational, almost calm nature of him on the first two occasions. Mm. The third one, he was very much out of control, but that was being driven by the people around him who wanted to be part of Kanye's entourage, and people who were making money out of Kanye as well, who were encouraging him to be like that, to want to get this level of hatred over, because it's still controversy sells records and always has done. Right the way from Elvis Presley.
But there's controversy, and then there's Hitler. Hitler was right.
Yeah,
and there's controversy, and then there's Kanye West.
I agree with you totally. And the situation is, you've just said, you still listen to Kanye's music, you still listen to it on streaming channels, you're still making him money, you're still giving money to him.
So do you think I'm a bit of a hypocrite, David, for saying, even while I still have his songs on some, I don't consciously search him out, but I've still got some of his songs on my playlist? That's true. Do you think there's a double standard for me then saying, but he shouldn't be able to perform at Wireless?
There is, to a point, a very small point to it, but it's the same as people listening to R. Kelly and people like that as well. Do you keep listening to R. Kelly? It's an interesting situation.
Convicted sex offender,
but as your last person who called made the point of politicians. You have one leader of a political party who made praising Hitler was his shtick at school right away until he was 18 or so. We give him airtime.
Yes.
We let him speak to people. We encourage him to say divisive things.
I mentioned some of the most famous names in the world fashion industry. Hugo Boss, Coco Chanel. Then you look at Roald Dahl, renowned, notorious anti-Semite. But this comes back to the division between the artists and the art, David, doesn't it? And the reason I don't feel that there is a double standard between me listening to Kanye West or reading Roald Dahl books to my son, for example, and not wanting a live performance with Kanye West to go ahead is because, for me at least, and feel free to disagree with this, the live performance is just as much a celebration of the man as it is the music. Whereas I can listen to a song in my car and think, good song, shame he's a complete wrong and clearly an awful human being. If I go, and like TJ's going to, and cheer the bloke, I'm not just saying I like his songs, I am endorsing him. And that's why I have a problem with a live performance.
I can understand that totally. I'll give you an example of what I saw at the weekend. I popped into a friend's store. He has a young member of sales staff in there, and they use Spotify to play the music in the store. And I was discussing with the store manager about the fact that Kanye playing, should he play, everything like that. Immediately, the young member of staff on there went and played the Hull Hit the track.
Yes.
He's got it on one of the streaming channels. He's got it and played it. And I said, so why are you playing that? Mate, it's a laugh. It winds you up.
Well, maybe that's a David key point and pertinent for the conversation, which is that with Kanye West, you can't divorce the art from the artist because some of the art is anti-Semitic. And as you say, he made a song called Heil Hitler.
Roald Dahl in his books wasn't ranting about the Jewish character that inspires animosity, as he was in his private life. You know, Wagner wasn't writing music that pertained to how awful the Jewish people are. Kanye West has merged the two. He's blurred the two by making his art anti-Semitic. So even if there is a distinction normally between art and artists, Kanye West has thrown that out the window by making a song titled Heil Hitler. Dave, I'm glad you raised that, because I think that's quite a pertinent point for our conversation. Thank you very much, indeed, for calling in. David in Norwich. Tons of calls coming in on this. More to come in just a moment. 12:46 the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Open the strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. President Trump yesterday. Now reports of a ceasefire deal. Is the madman approach working? And we'll have more moon talk.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK. So we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my teamer off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun. From design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
At Tesco, we know that beans
means Heinz.
And you love to ask.
Have you had yours?
All of you.
Love it.
Hate it.
And because
I'm worth it.
When you need low prices on brands you love, like 150 grams of Heinz beans, 12-pack of Weetabix, 250 grams of Marmite, or 700 millilitres of L'Oreal Elvive Colour Protect Shampoo, look out for the Everyday Low Prices logo in-store and online. Tesco. Every little helps. Everyday low prices includes thousands of products across the majority of larger stores and online prices held until the 10th of May. Selected branded products only.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Ben Kentish.
It is 12:49, Ben Kentish here, in for James O'Brien on LBC. We're talking about Kanye West being invited to the Wireless Music Festival, where he will be one of the headline acts, unless the festival organisers take note of the calls for them to change their minds, or unless the government intervenes and bars Kanye West from entering the country. Two things that I think ought to happen. But what about you? Avril in St Albans. Hi, Avril.
Oh, hi, Ben. The reason I picked up the phone is because I was listening to one of your callers, TJ, and excusing Kanye's anti-Semitism because he's got medical conditions. And I've had conversations with people. I'm a Jewess. My heritage is full Jewish. My grandmother lost all her family in the Holocaust. And I take umbrage to it because, you know, Hitler, people used to say Hitler had a medical, you know, he was insane. He had syphilis, which affected his brain. And I don't even understand why we are discussing whether Kanye, he should even come to this country to entertain us. It should be a straight, actually, no, you're not welcome.
Do you think the government should ban him from coming here?
100%. The government should ban him. There's too much anti-Semitism on our streets already now. Because of all the different reasons that's going on in the world, and everything is blurred. Everything is blurred. You're blurred. You know, if you're Jewish, then you must be pro-Israel, you must be pro-this. So it's all blurred at the moment, and it will just kind of rear it all up again. So the fact that Keir Starmer is talking about it, it gives me slight comfort. Whether he has actually got, he will call it.
It's all well and good, the Prime Minister saying, this is deeply concerning. I'd quite like, if I was Prime Minister, I wouldn't just point at things saying, that's deeply concerning. I would say what I was going to do to make it less concerning. That said, Avril, Phil Rosenberg from the Board of Deputies was saying there might be legal reasons why he can't do that, which is a very fair point. He doesn't want to sort of preempt the visa application and so on. So maybe we need to just give him a bit of time, I guess.
I also, it's kind of reminiscent, just before the war, the Second World War, it was that the Jews were the money lenders, they were the bankers, they were this, they were that.
Yeah.
And now, he kind of triggered me when your caller said, oh, yeah, they're taking over the music industry.
Yeah.
Hang on.
It's an age-old anti-Semitic trope, isn't it, about undue Jewish influence in the arts and the media. Kanye West absolutely perpetuated that trope, which was also used by the Nazis, and TJ there called in to say there was some logic to it.
Yeah, well, I totally disagree with TJ. But I do agree that, everyone should have a second chance. Mm. However, let's give it a good few years to see this man.
See if he means it.
Yeah.
See if it's genuine, rather than just leaping. Oh, well, yeah, he spent 3 years praising Hitler, but now he's apologised, so it's all okay. Which was basically TJ's argument. And I'm with you, Avril, on the mental health point, by the way. A lot of people have serious mental health conditions. I'm not aware of any serious mental health condition that makes you hate Jews. A lot of people have issues like bipolar disorder. They don't turn into Nazis as a result of it. And I think it's a little bit offensive, frankly, to people with those conditions to say, oh, well, he's just bipolar, he would do that, wouldn't he? No. Being bipolar does not make you anti-Semitic. No mental health condition does. It might make you more likely to say your anti-Semitic views, but Kanye West clearly held them in the first place, and that's the issue. Thank you, Avril, for the call. Good to have you with us this afternoon. To Southwark and Seoul. Seoul, where are you on this one? Hi.
Hi there. So, with some of the points you've made, I definitely agree. I think, excusing Kanye's behaviour simply because he's bipolar doesn't make sense. I used to be a Kanye fan. I've listened to his music. I think Graduation is one of the greatest albums of all time. However, I would say there has to be a distinction between the artist and the man himself. I think when it comes to you yourself said that you still listen to Kanye West songs,
mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't want to see him perform. If what he has said is that disgusting and that bad, I wouldn't want anything to do with him, period.
But hold on, sorry, you just said there needs to be a distinction between the artist and the art.
No. So that's what I'm saying. So there needs to be a distinction between the artist and the man. Yeah.
Okay. So your distinction is between Kanye West the person and Kanye West the rapper.
Yeah.
But they're the same guy.
Okay. Put it like this: if you're still listening to what you're saying, is that he shouldn't be allowed in the country, and you wouldn't go to watch him perform, but you would listen to his music.
Yes. I don't think you are endorsing him as a person by listening to his song on the radio or on your streaming platform. I do think you are endorsing him as a person if you go there and you scream and you cheer and you whoop and you holler when he walks out on stage.
Yeah, but I think you're endorsing his art by listening to him, so there's no difference between endorsing his art by when he performs.
Do you really? So if I have a... I sometimes wear... Someone bought me some lovely men's Chanel aftershave a few years ago. I wear it quite a lot. Do you think I'm endorsing Coco Chanel, who was a Nazi agent, by doing that?
So there we go. There's the line. So you're aware of that. I wouldn't even be aware that he was he was any of that. But you're aware of that, but you're still supporting. So you would still buy. I'm sure that you've bought that perfume many a time.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, why would it be so different for him to come and perform?
Because it's the live performance, and it's the fact that he will be being celebrated as Kanye West rather than just his songs being listened to. That's the difference for me.
Put it like this, in a couple months, every cinema is going to be flooded, sold out when Michael comes out. Love Michael Jackson's music. Mm. However, there's been multiple documentaries about him. Doing this, that, and the third, allegedly being a PDF file.
Yep. But I have the same issue. So where do we draw the line?
If Michael Jackson was still alive,
yes,
I believe one of his tour stops was going to be here, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I for me at least, I'd be consistent. I'd say Michael Jackson, great songs, listen to them all you want, but I don't want him performing in London. If those allegations were still hanging over him, I'd say the same. I don't want R. Kelly to be able to perform it, for God's sake. You know, doesn't mean that his music should never be played again. I think there is a, for me, there's a distinction there. In the same way as you can recognise a Roald Dahl book and think it's a great children's read and not want to do anything that might endorse the guy himself. He's dead now. But the same applies to Kanye. It's the same would apply, I think, to Michael Jackson. Thank you, Sol. Lots of calls to get to. Let's talk to Chris in Crouch End. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. Yeah, my specialty is branding, and it's very interesting to read today that their two biggest sponsors have pulled out from wireless. Obviously, because they're worried about the consequence, and because their research has shown that the vast majority of people don't approve of this. I live near Finsbury Park, and I'm quite glad, be very glad if he doesn't come, to be honest. But it is, you know, nowadays these festivals do rely a lot on sponsorship from big brands, and they should think a bit smarter before they book someone like this who's so controversial.
So there's a sort of financial element for why they perhaps made a mistake. Is there not a moral one as well, though, Chris?
Oh, absolutely.
Have they not made a moral faux pas, as well as just a sort of professional one, by inviting a renowned self-declared Nazi for the best part of 3 years to headline their festival?
I think they've probably gone for thinking it's controversial, but I think maybe the naivety of those responsible within the organisation who organise wireless is they haven't really thought this through properly. They think, oh, yeah, it's OK. They're looking at the profit because they know this will sell 50,000 people.
That's even worse. If that's true, if you think they've consciously courted controversy by basically allowing renowned anti-Semites to come and perform, I think that's even worse than it being a mistake.
Well, how can you not know that? I mean, you should be intelligent enough, people sitting in a room going, well, if we book him, are we not going to be criticised for, you know, his publicity? And that apology he made was looked like it'd been issued by the PR department anyway.
Mm.
And where is the, you know, there's no authenticity in this at all. And he can't claim bipolar and all that because, as you said, it doesn't make you, you know, a Nazi.
I'm not doubting he's got bipolar. I'm not disputing he has bipolar. I'm saying a lot of people have bipolar without becoming Hitler fanatics. Thank you, Chris. I'm out of time, I'm afraid. Really interesting conversation. Sorry to everyone I didn't get a chance to get to this morning and this afternoon. I'll be back with you, though, at my normal time. Hope you join me then, 10 o'clock tomorrow night, 10 till 1, Monday to Thursday. So do give us a listen then if you've enjoyed the show this morning. Thank you for your company. Enjoy the rest of your Easter Monday. Thanks for all your calls and your texts as well. If you missed any of today's show, it's on both the Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. Download that for free for now. Feel free right now from your app store. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Simon Marks. But right now, here she is.
Sheila Fogarty. For good. Yeah, thanks very much. I'm going to pick up on the Kanye West story at 3, actually, and ask should the Home Secretary ban him, yay, from travelling to the UK. He's due to headline Wireless Festival, as you've been hearing from Ben there. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, thinks she should ban him. Two, the child benefit cap is scrapped from today, meaning more money for larger families who are on universal credit. 500,000 families, pretty much. £3.6 billion a year. Is it worth it? Is it the right political choice when we know that the benefits bill more generally needs to come down? Does Donald Trump's extreme way of communicating, you know, like an aggressive lunatic, does it serve a purpose? Is he an actual madman, or is he pretending to be a madman as he sees it to get the job done?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock.
Iran and the US say they've received proposals to end the conflict in the Middle East. Pakistan's peace plan includes an immediate ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump has threatened to blow up Iranian power plants if the waterway isn't unblocked. Middle East expert Nomi Bar Yaakov's been following developments.
The head of the army in Pakistan has been speaking overnight to the US Vice President, J.D. Vance, who's very keen to end the war. I think he never wanted to go to war. And to Foreign Minister of Iran, that has been given US guarantees that he will not be assassinated because they want to negotiate with him.
Iran says it won't be pressured by deadlines. The NHS is telling patients to come forward for appointments as normal, with resident doctors going on strike this week. Tens of thousands of members of the BMA are walking out from tomorrow in their dispute over pay and jobs. A fifth person's been arrested on suspicion of murder over the death of a pedestrian killed in a crash in Barnsley. 45-year-old Liam Green died after being hit by a car in Cudworth on Friday. A 53-year-old man was arrested on Sunday and remains in custody. It's understood PayPal is the latest sponsor to distance itself from London's Wireless Festival over the booking of Kanye West as headliner. There's been a backlash over the rapper's booking because of his previous anti-Semitic comments. West apologised earlier this year and blamed a bipolar episode. President of the Board of Deputies of British Jews, Phil Rosenberg, has told LBC it was the wrong decision to invite West in the first place.
To have someone who has described themselves as a Nazi release a song called Heil Hitler and about the 400-year experience of enslavement by black people, said it was like a choice. He's a deeply offensive person and said deeply offensive things, and it's a real problem that he's been chosen to headline the festival for 3 days.
And the Artemis 2 crew are on track to fly by the moon this evening. The astronauts will catch a glimpse of the Apollo 12 and 14 landing sites while circling the lunar planet. Mission Science Officer Kelsey Young tells us why the trip is important.
What we have experienced here on Earth, the moon has experienced. The moon, though, doesn't have things like plate tectonics, oceans, vegetation. And we have those things, and they are great for us here on Earth, but they do obscure the geologic record. And so by going to the moon, we can actually learn more about our own planet.
LBC weather, a mostly dry and bright afternoon with some rain further north, some light winds further west, and a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm David Dom.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you and a happy Easter to you as well. Now that the big day is over, we can say it to you with full voice. Listen, I want to talk about that Truth Social post that Donald Trump sent yesterday and the news of hopefully a working deal that seems to be emerging in relation to America, Israel and Iran. I'll tell you a bit more about that in a second. But this Truth Social post that he put out at the weekend, and I'm going to say it one more time, but I won't be repeating it constantly, to use the term, to call the Iranian regime at this point, you crazy bastards, in the context of ordering them to open the Strait of Hormuz. By the way, while talks are taking place around this issue, it seems on the surface of it, maybe in the depths of it, you tell me, certainly seems on the surface of it to be the acts, the words, the ramblings of a madman, or somebody who's just decided he simply does not care what the outcome is, because it's such a careless thing to do. Or, alternative theory, the theory of the madman theory, that there is meaning in it. In his mind, at least, in the minds of the people around him, there is some small gain, big gain to be made by these kinds of ramblings. I think this is one of the maddest so far, isn't it? Because of the abusive, offensive language in it. Is it a strategy, or is it where he is now in terms on the sanity spectrum? I mean, I'll give you some examples of what people, key people in American politics have been saying. Marjorie Taylor Greene, one time absolute fervent supporter of Donald Trump, says everyone in the Trump administration who claims to be a Christian needs to beg forgiveness from God and intervene in the president's madness, is the word she used. She wrote a very long post. She said, I know all of you and I know him, and he's gone insane. All of you are complicit. I'm not defending Iran, but let's be honest about all of this. Senator Chris Murphy called it completely unhinged. He wrote on X, if I were in Trump's cabinet, I would spend Easter calling constitutional lawyers about the 25th Amendment, the 25th Amendment being an amendment in which you can try to remove the president for reasons of lack of functionality, being unable to carry out the post. He goes on, Senator Chris Murphy, this is completely, utterly unhinged. He's already killed thousands. He's going to kill thousands more. Bernie Sanders, independent US senator, described it as dangerous and mentally unbalanced. Congress has got to act now and end this war. Chuck Schumer, senator minority leader, said his rant resembled that of an unhinged madman. On social media, he's threatening possible war crimes and alienating allies. So that gives you some sense of what people have been thinking. The backdrop to all of this, of course, is that early this morning, we hear reports, some of which have been confirmed at very high levels, of a framework to end hostilities passed to the US and Iran. This was according to Reuters earlier on this morning. According to those reports, there are two tiers to the deal, an immediate ceasefire with a more comprehensive agreement to follow later on, kind of shades of the Gaza deal, I suppose, in that. Pakistan, Egypt and Turkish mediators have been involved in the negotiations with Iran. Pakistan's army chief, Asim Munir, has been in contact, I'm quoting now, all night long with the US Vice President J.D. Vance. A senior Iranian official has ruled out opening the Strait of Hormuz, which was the key demand in that crazy tweet, as part of any temporary ceasefire. So these all come after the post on Truth Social, in which Donald Trump appeared to set a new deadline for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, which is the very early hours of Wednesday morning, our time. So, is he plain mad by this stage, or is he playing mad? 0345 6060973, the number to call. You can text 84850. Lewis Goodall joins me to talk about this, presenter of Sundays with Lewis Goodall on LBC and co-host of The News Agents, and he'll be in for James O'Brien this week as well. Hello, Lewis. Thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Sheila. Live from the A1.
Live from the A1. Marvellous. Well, listen, is President Trump A1 at the moment, or has he lost his marbles?
Well, let's just recap, shall we, Sheila? Let's just take the broad sweep of the last month with President Trump's pronouncements on the war. And let's just remember, I know sometimes it's sort of still pinch yourself, but this is the leader of the most powerful country in the world, the richest country in the world, with the mightiest army in the world. One minute, President Trump says that the war in Iran is over, or it's nearly over. The next, he says it will continue for 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks. Then he says that Iran has been eviscerated. Then he says there was no real need to attack it in the first place because they'd already obliterated Iran's nuclear weapons and were basically doing it for fun. Then he vows that the fighting would go on. A huge bombardment, he has warned the world, which would almost certainly result in the Iranian destruction of the world's remaining key oil and gas refineries in the Gulf. He says it might begin in 5